Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Down in Front. Our movie this week is Dawn of the Dead. You guys sound like a really bad THX impression. The 1978 yeah. George Romero version. Go ahead and the
I was doing Barbershop.
The theatrical release. Yeah. We just Orkman Moan in the 7th. The theatrical 1978 Dawn of the Dead. Go ahead and pop in your DVD or Blu-ray. Press play, press pause. When the in association with logo fades to carpet. The first frame of all carpet you see.
When it fades to Berber.
Yeah. Go ahead and pop. That's not Berber. That's carpet.
That's
Berber is like tied
shag.
Down.
Shag, yeah.
Yeah.
Red shag.
When
on,
it,
the wall.
Excuse
on the wall.
Who's me?
Press pause when it fades to carpet. In a second, I'll say 3, 2, 1, unpause, at which point I'll
in
press
the 70s,
play.
This was very important. The distinction.
You'll press play, and we'll watch the movie together in perfect sync. It'll be like any other commentary, except, of course, this time with four zombies in your head. And those zombies this week are myself, as always, Teague Christie, my friend Brian Brain Spinifter. I only got brains. Michael Dorkman Scott.
I was going to say brains.
Yeah. So four zombies in your brains.
That's yeah.
And Trey.
We got to do it over again. Which,
Trey yeah. the Amazing Stokes.
Hello, Aunt Alicia.
Huh.
That's for Dorkman.
Yes.
Now he knows that reference.
Yes, I do.
All the cool people know that reference.
Dawn of the Dead. I had not seen many zombie movies prior to us sitting down to do Dawn of the Dead for Down in Front initially. And I had, you know, I'd seen Planet Terror and Shaun of the Dead. Basically was what I had, and that was because I was not interested in zombies. I had no particular desire to see a zombie movie, and I don't think I'd ever seen a good zombie movie, so it's sort of a correlation-causation thing, which came first. Either I didn't want to see zombies because I'd never seen a good zombie movie, and I never wanted to see a good zombie movie because I'd never been a fan of zombies, and it lasted until this week when I finally sat down and watched Dawn of the Dead. And this movie would not make me a fan of zombies. This movie is interesting, and I understand its cultural impact, but it doesn't play out the way that I feel like a zombie movie could and still be interesting. Because zombies are a canvas. They're not, you know, a plot element. They're not a genre. It's just something you can do.
Look what they did to vampires.
Yeah, no Ooh. Shit, right? And I feel like you can do a lot with zombies. And this movie doesn't do as much as I feel like it could. And obviously that has a lot to do with the fact that it's more or less the first huge zombie movie that ever happened. Night of the Living Dead was 10 years before. But at the end of the day, this movie doesn't make me, scream rape. It's just... It's a 2.5 hour long, or however long it is.
2 hours.
Not that long.
This one's two. Okay. There's an extended version that's almost 2.5.
Which now, is a little tedious.
But. Immediately after seeing this, I also watched Zack Snyder's 2004 Dawn of the Dead and loved it. Had a grin on my face the whole time. So we'll be examining the differences as we go on.
Yeah. But we're also going to do that.
Right.
One,
we're going to do Dawn of the Dead 2004 as well. So, Brian, Dawn of the Dead, zombies.
George
Romero.
This
haircuts. What do you got?
As I've mentioned before, I'm not a huge horror guy. Not really my primary genre, but I do love a good zombie movie and a good apocalyptic story. The truth is, this is a very important film, but it's by itself, absent the historical significance, it's not a great film. But it laid the groundwork and the foundation for tropes and storytelling and this idea of infection and zombies that would give us a lot of great movies later on.
So, like Philadelphia.
Like Philadelphia. Like Apollo 13.
Yeah, very much like Apollo 13.
Really, most of Tom Hanks is Uvra.
Yeah. I totally see Castaway in this.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. But in that sense, it's a very important film. I'm sure we'll go into a little bit about the weaknesses of the story and where Snyder's version improves, but some of the things that Snyder's loses as a result of the changes it makes. But it's good. It's a great idea. It's not executed perfectly, but executed fairly well.
Dorkman, talk about zombies. Talk about Dawn of the Dead.
You know, you could actually write a film school thesis relating this to Castaway. You joke, but you really could.
Yeah. Wow. We'll get into that, I guess.
But
you can write a film school thesis about anything. Doesn't mean it's valid or
worth
true. Reading.
Well, no. That's why I was...
In this, I will compare and contrast Dawn of the Dead with Castaway.
Yeah. That's why
some poor teacher's assistant has to read that.
That's why I was I got an English degree instead of like math, because I'm like, you can totally fake English degree, you know, an essay. You
that's
can't
why I got
fake
a communications
proof.
Degree. Yeah. Just that much more bullshit than an English degree. Yeah.
Hey, I said something, right? I communicated. A+. Anyway, I hadn't seen this movie in a while. I rewatched it in preparation for this commentary, and I actually watched the extended version to compare to the theatrical version because it was the only one I could get a hold of in time.
Wow.
But I actually like the extended version quite a bit. There's scenes in there that are I think clarify kind of the intent of the movie, because this isn't. This, like you said, this is zombies are more of a backdrop in this movie. Like nowadays, the zombies are the point, in a lot of ways in more modern movies, whereas in movies like this, the zombies were a canvas to make a point of some kind. So, you know, famously, this is about consumerism in the most obvious way, but there's a lot of other stuff going on with the various zombies.
Zombies always tend to be about race, at least in some capacity.
They tend to be about race and about, you know, class struggles in general and stuff like that. And I think this one is very much about examining social mores, almost, what we value and why we value it and stuff like that, which consumerism and race and all that stuff all tie into.
Yeah.
And I think there are much... I liked the extended version because there are scenes in there which I don't believe are in here that help make that theme a little clearer, and I can think of at least one that I'll bring up when it would be in the movie but is not in this version. But
Trey, 1978, George Romero.
1978, yeah. Where were you? I was a freshman in film school, and it was a glorious time.
Hitler was marching across Europe.
Europe, and the Allies were preparing for a counterattack.
Eat snack is smart.
Yes. It's when this movie came out, and again, it's a like many movies, like Star Wars, like other movies, which was around at the same time. You know, something that happened before you were born is kind of hard to explain what it was like. But so even at the time, this movie wasn't perfect. It wasn't like that was the greatest movie ever made. However, it did contain things that we had never seen in the theater before. It was groundbreaking for me and revelatory in a lot of ways. And I did, in fact, write in film school, I wrote a paper about Dawn of the Dead.
See?
I actually wrote about Dawn of the Dead.
Well played.
Because this was, for me anyway, and I don't know if there are other examples of movies you can point to, but this was a movie where I realized, like, wow, you can make a crazy over-the-top horror movie and have a theme to it. And as heavy-handed as the themes might get at times, the fact that it had one, you know, was amazing to me. Like, wow, it's not just about people's guts getting ripped out, although it has that too, and yet it seems to be about something, which I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know that was allowed. So the fact that you can do a what is essentially a B-movie and have it have, you know, some kind of relevance or attempt to put some relevance in it, I think is, you know, it's, you can draw a line. If I went back to film school, I would draw a line from that to X-Men and Spider-Man and all these crazy things that, you know, now major Hollywood studios make these kind of movies and they go, well, I'm trying to make it about something. So, you know, these movies can be about something in a way that Snyder's movie is much more about the thrills, which it delivers tremendously, but I don't think there's a lot of thematic resonance to it other than a kind of a nihilistic worldview about, we're all going to die. We're not going to get our shit together, which this movie also says as well.
We can talk about until it when the we get end. There. I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with that on Snyder, although I do agree that it doesn't have as much to say as
I don't remember the Snyder movie saying anything other than, look out, zombies, they're really cool. This movie, you know, and again, this movie is pretty sometimes in your face with its consumerism. It actually spells it out. They actually say what the theme is, basically.
And how.
It's ham-fisted, but again, that is, like you're saying, one of the things that Romero really brought to not just the zombie genre, but kind of B-movie type movies in general.
Yeah, he attempted to make it about something, which was very shocking at 78. And the fact that another thing is, as cartoony and silly and ridiculous as it looks now, and it even then looked a little silly, still the fact that there's this much flesh being torn on screen was amazing at the time. And you have to remember that this movie was, you know, so horrifying at the time that it was released unrated. And that was, you know, right away we had to go, oh my god, we have to go see that, whatever that is. And me and my friends, we, you know, found someone with a car and we went down to whatever theater we saw it in. And the moment when I was early on, where I just said, okay, I'm strapping in because whatever this movie's going, I'm in, is when the SWAT guy blows the guy's head off, because that was a first in movie history. We'd never seen that before in a movie, and that's probably one of the reasons it was unrated. But around that same time, Scanners came out, which also has an exploding head, and those were the two exploding heads. They were within about a year of each other, and it was like, wow!
It was a heady time,
and what the hell just happened on screen?
I saw.
So I love this movie. I love this movie partly.
He gives this look around like, yeah, who got anybody? That? Come on.
I love the movie partly out of a sense of nostalgia, you know, in the way that, you know, you guys defend, you know, Hook or whatever.
Yeah. This, they haven't done unrated movies as a release for a long, like they've started doing it again.
Yeah,
on DVD.
What was the last one they did?
The last one they did, the most recent one, which nobody knows about, was Hatchet 2.
Hatchet 2.
Oh, nice.
Which was just a few weeks ago.
It was in theaters for like a day.
But it was in theaters for like 3 weeks or maybe a weekend or whatever, and then everyone was like, nah. So, and then they pulled it. So,
the unrating is not the cash cow that perhaps it used to be.
It didn't work as
well. It wasn't necessarily
well, and it
cash
wasn't well advertised because who the hell heard?
That's why if you're not rated, you don't get as much advertising.
Right.
That's part of the reason. But it was a draw, the fact that it was so, whatever happens in this movie is so amazing that they just, rather than release it as an X-rated movie, which they don't even have anymore. Now it's, what, NC-17?
NC-17,
Is
X was technically never a thing anyway.
Yeah.
Really?
It was never. We should probably get this going.
Yeah, well, we'll kick this pig. But anyway, so it's. I love this movie out of nostalgia. I applaud what Romero was able to do for the first time that I ever was aware of anyone doing it. But yeah, it's a cheesy B movie. There's no denying it's a cheesy B movie. You'd have to kind of roll with that.
Yeah,
right on. You're at the point where the in association with logo faded to carpet, as I am here. So have your mouse or remote ready. 3, 2, 1, on pause.
But yeah, the X rating has actually never been an official MPAA rating. It was just like if the MPAA basically refused to rate it, they just called it X. And then X became associated with porn, so then they changed it to NC-17.
Brian, do you know where PG-13 came from? Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom. I almost said Raiders, but yeah, Temple of Doom. Have you guys ever seen a double X film?
That's not real.
Triple X is the porn thing. Yeah.
Double X just became was a marketing tool to go. Yeah. Oh, this is double X.
This is more X.
What does that mean?
And then triple X, you have to go into the little beaded room in the back of the video store.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Now here's the thing. I have
after Pee Wee.
I have a split mind about this opening sequence because what they're doing is an interesting cold open. That's what the point of this stuff is, and it does grab you. But the first time I saw this movie, it confused the shit out of me.
Yeah,
it's an interesting way to jump into the circumstances. But we do spend a long time in this just to kind of set up the situation and a couple of the characters. We spend a long time in this.
And here's what's going on too is that people knew, and I knew when I saw this that this is. Well, it's not a sequel. It's not Night of the Living Dead 2.
Right.
It's following the same universe, and it's successive. It comes after that movie. So I'm thinking...
That is a sequel.
Well, yeah, but it's not like the same... It's not the continuation of the storyline. It's just the universe
again. Well, it's not a continuation of the characters. It is a continuation of the storyline. Well,
in any case, I'm watching this, and I'm going, maybe these people are in the other movie, and I'm missing something here. Hopefully they'll explain it.
Maybe this is where the last movie ended.
Yeah. Well,
this is not the case.
Well, this is the equivalent of watching Empire Strikes Back first.
Yeah.
This movie totally assumes that you've seen the first one because why on earth would you watch this without having seen the first one?
Although you can, I think, if you know,
not all of us at the table can because one of us couldn't. But,
I guess so.
Here's the thing: I then stopped Dawn of the Dead and watched Night of the Living Dead. Like I stopped Dawn of the Dead 10 minutes in and said, "Guys, we should watch Night of the Living Dead so we can see what's going on here," and watched it, and that was a story unto itself and had very little to do with the sequence. So it is just confusing.
Well, it is, again, you did it the wrong way. When you watched the first one, and you would have gotten this, but you were already predicated against the opening of this one, prejudiced against it. The first one is all about people trapped in a farmhouse, but out there somewhere, civilization's still happening, and they just have to get back to it. And their lifeline to civilization in the first movie is the television, which
and
is
the radio.
Like, we can just get to these rescue stations, which are set up. This movie starts by saying, guess what? The people who are telling people where to go, they didn't have their shit together at all.
Yeah.
Because that's what this movie is about when we lose the war. The first movie is just about this very isolated incident. It's about, five people in a bunker in one part of this incident and no sense of the big picture at all other than these brief little media flashes that they're able to get. This movie is about how we lose. We totally lose.
So this is really the introduction of the concept of the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
That kind of force taking down global civilization.
Yeah, and people not... I mean, this whole movie addresses it over and over and over again, but people unable to accept that what they understand about reality no longer applies.
Right.
I mean, right now what we've got going on is she's just taken the rescue stations, quote unquote, off the air. The little Chiron saying where the rescue stations are because they're invalid.
Yeah.
Most of them have been overrun. They don't know if they're safe, and she's taking them off because they're not safe.
And the station manager says, "But people will stop watching."
Yeah,
as if that's still what's valuable.
Exactly.
To him.
We won't get the ratings.
About ratings.
We'll try.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's sitting there saying, get them back.
He's yelling at the security guy, and the security guy's like,
I'm leaving.
No, this is all. So right away you're seeing, what you're getting is some character development on this character who we're just meeting, a character of Fran, who, you know, Galen Ross there, you know, that Fran's getting a grip on what this really means earlier than everyone around her. You know, she's got a sense of, wow, this is not just about, wow, this is a, you know, a great breakthrough.
This isn't just a bad day
ratings.
At work.
Yeah. This is not just a, you know, this is not a flood. This is not a fire.
And I think opening it this way, you know, number one, if you compare this to Night of the Living Dead, and if you were coming in from that perspective, this is much more of a movie. You're watching this and you're like, wow, this is a real movie as compared to, you know, some guy with a camera in a farmhouse. And it feels, you know, right around this time, what network was 74, right?
I think,
74, 76. So, you know, the idea of a movie taking place inside of a TV station was kind of familiar at the time. So it's almost like, in a way, the cinematic language of this is a familiar situation going completely to shit. I mean, it kind of went to shit in Network, too. But,
but the ratings were great because there was no zombie apocalypse
exactly.
to worry about. So, could the sequence be cut tighter? Yeah. But
I think it just could be more clear. It doesn't need to be tighter.
You know what I think would actually help is because basically the sequence is to introduce us to these two characters, and then we have the tenement sequence to introduce us to the other two characters.
And the zombies.
And the zombies. But to do
this scene of the movie isn't even really specifically telling you what the problem is.
Right.
I mean, it's sort of it's making you wait.
He's trying to, the guy is trying to yell about the zombies. You know, the white guy on stage, he's from the government, and he's setting up the tenement sequence. But there's so much chaos going on right now that you don't really get that connection.
You know what I think would help to cut parallel between the two?
Yeah, that
could have helped. To have both storylines going on at the same time and introducing both characters.
It could have, yeah. It's. I think it's kind of interesting.
That's more sophisticated editing than they really did at that time.
Whether it's successful or not, I think the idea that these people are trying to speak knowledgeably and broadcast information about something that they're not actually experiencing. You know, that they're not seeing any zombies. They're not involved in that level yet.
And in fact, the host, you know, the white guy's from the government or whatever, and he's saying, you know, it's martial law, turn out you're dead. And the black guy's basically the host, and he's saying, we don't believe you, we don't trust the government, we don't blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So it's very... I almost wonder, aside from the rescue stations, I wonder if it's really helping anything almost. Yeah. Now, this is an interesting thing, and the thing I heard on iTunes U, there was a course on zombies in the culture and stuff like that. You know,
Sean Hode,
yeah, from the University of Alabama, of all places.
Wow.
But very knowledgeable and very interesting. This guy here, a very interesting comment on race and stuff like that, because we talked about before, we have previously talked about zombies representing kind of a new class rising and stuff like that. This one guy who goes in and starts shooting everyone, you know, they know that there are zombies in there. They know that they're hiding zombies. That's why they're going in. But he's more excited about the opportunity to shoot blacks and Puerto Ricans.
Sure.
Been there.
And that's why they ultimately have to take him out because he's so excited because he's like, he can just start blasting, which he does. And he's like, oh, they could have been a zombie. I had to shoot him. Yeah. Oh, she could have been a zombie. I had to rape her. You know, it's like, I can't take that chance.
Pretty sure he was turning into a zombie. Yeah. and he also is, you know, that's a deeper level of it. But for me, watching the first time, he was much more of an underscoring of the fact that this movie is going to be about how we're going to lose it.
Right.
You know, we're just going to, like, some people are just going to snap and go crazy and not think in the big picture and do the wrong thing.
Right. Because people, as comes up again and again and again, in the movie, people, can't wrap their minds around Romero brings it up in kind of all his movies. People can't quite wrap their minds around the fact that, you know, whatever our differences are, we are all more similar than we are to The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And if we could wrap our brains around that, we might be okay, but we can't.
And if we can, and the issue is, you know, we have to, humans, you know, here comes the scene with the exploding head, which is actually a head cast of Galen Ross, strangely enough, in blackface. It's obviously just a dummy, and it's, you know, if you freeze frame it, it's as cheesy as it gets. But again, in the theater, full of people, in 1978... I can't convey to you the noise that we made. It was partly like a and it was partly a whoa, like that just happened in front of my eyes, and that's the first, you know, first in my life that's about to happen. And me and hundreds
that was
other
the
people.
Sound I heard in About Schmidt when Kathy Bates got into the hot tub.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think it's very effective. I mean, you say it's cheesy, but it kind of is. But
well,
it's still
very
it's
all of 10 frames long or whatever it is. But you know, it's great. So. The thing I was getting at was what the hell was I talking about?
Exploding head, Galen Hurd.
Exploding head before Galen Hurd. Yeah. The fact that we have to put aside all of the old prejudices and all the old differences and all the old class structures and everything else and just get together and see each other as the live humans are the good guys and the other ones are the bad guys. Because if we can't pull together using that as our new criteria, we're going to lose. And that's what this movie tells you, is that we don't pull together. That we
can't get that through our heads.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, it's even stated early on, and we'll get there, when they're taking off in the helicopter, Peter's basically saying, we're the bad guys.
Yeah.
Like, let's just get used to that idea.
Yeah. Another great touch in the helicopter that I, at the time, I got it, was when the other cops are evacuating to the quote-unquote islands, and one of them says, hey, you guys got any cigarettes? And they all go, no, we don't have any cigarettes. And as soon as the cops are gone and they're off in their helicopter, they all light up cigarettes.
Yeah.
Which, again, was an indication of, this is why we're not going to make it, because we don't stick together when the chips are down.
We're not willing to share.
Yeah. It's
just
sharing.
Share.
That's very much
learn to share.
Yeah,
this movie.
I mean, it's a very basic kindergarten kind of
yeah,
life.
Exactly. If you learn to share, you can avert the zombie apocalypse, or at least survive it.
I'm not sure I quite... I don't know. People have this, and maybe it's just from being inculcated with the idea of zombies and understanding them a lot better than people necessarily would have at this time, because there weren't as many zombie movies and stuff.
Because the tropes weren't as established, yeah.
But I'm like, if I was dealing with a zombie, I would have no problem shooting it in the face. I wouldn't be that guy who hesitated, like, oh, it still looks like a person. I'm like,
what if it's your sister or something? Yeah,
well, that's the big question.
That's what these scenes are about, is these people are seeing their own family members.
Yeah, here we go.
And this is, again, like, whoa, I can't believe that happened in front of my eyes.
And actually, having seen the extended version, there's a lot of added stuff, but a lot of the gore, like that scene with him biting her arm, and actually the exploding head, are cut out. Which I don't understand, quite honestly. And it makes less sense when you cut those out. But then we don't see this guy blow himself away.
In the extended version, they don't have those scenes?
No.
Really?
No. You see the zombie that gets his head blown off, but then you hear a gunshot and the woman screaming. You see the woman screaming. You don't see the exploding head.
Interesting.
Which
it's
is
like
weird.
Chinatown, really.
Forget it, Jake.
It's Zombie Town.
It's Zombie Town. It's Zombie Land.
Why wasn't Jake here when we did Chinatown? We could have stretched that for 2 hours.
I would have gone to that well so much.
Yeah. You know what happens to nosy fellas? So if we can make a quote. Now here's, again, underscoring the theme. These guys go, okay, we'll cooperate.
Yeah.
You know?
It's easy for them to look at each other and go, we're on the same team.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, they're not. I mean, that guy just dropped one of their fellow SWAT guys. He's not necessarily loyal to the team.
And but they are actually on separate SWAT teams. They sent in two separate SWAT teams, which is what they
do. They don't know each other.
Yeah.
So they, again, the idea of these guys go, they spell it out more or less in this scene. They talk about how this is not working.
Yeah.
We got to try something else.
Just run.
Yeah.
Something that's interesting and nowadays watching movies you don't really necessarily think about is it was a much bigger deal in Night of the Living Dead but still in Dawn of the Dead is you've got essentially a black hero, a black protagonist.
Yeah.
The black guy is the guy with his shit most together.
In fact, he does that in Day of the Dead.
Yep. Yep. And
the black guy is in all three movies, of Romero's versions, is the guy who has it right.
Yeah. And we're almost used to that now because we've got Denzel Washington and Wesley Snipes
Samuel
and Will
Jackson.
Smith and Sam Jackson and Ving Rhames
and the remake.
Yeah. So it's not the kind of thing where
Morgan
you go, a black guy is a hero. What?
But,
nowadays we don't even think about it.
Guy is president.
You have to be an indie movie to get away with that kind of craziness.
Yeah.
And famously, Romero claims that at least for Night of the Living Dead, that was never a conscious decision on his part. It's like, that guy just gave the best audition.
Yeah, he was the best actor.
Not a lot of great actors in Pittsburgh, It's like he was really good, so there you go.
Yeah, and they never
Well, not
up...
a lot of black people in general in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
Philadelphia,
they got,
sure.
They got about three, but the one of them was really good.
Although there are a lot of zombies, so.
Strangely enough, yeah.
It's perfect, really.
So it did lower a lot of the production costs, so to be fair.
By the way, Romero did a movie.
That's why the makeup looks better.
This fella here, Scotty Reiniger, I believe I'm pronouncing his name right. Ken Foray is the black fellow, and Scotty Reiniger is the other fellow, who I always thought was great. Scott appeared in one of Romero's later films that he did not long after this, called Knight Riders, which starred a completely unknown Ed Harris at the time.
Wow.
That's a really...
Did he look the same then, too?
He did. He looked like a very tiny, young-haired, long-haired version, or longer than usual.
That's creepy.
Version
That's
of himself.
Terrifying. Only beginning
a
to
really,
version.
A really interesting film that I really enjoyed. I haven't seen it in about 20 years now, but I enjoyed it at the time. I'd be curious to see it again now. Very odd movie, but not nothing to do with zombies at all. Knight Riders with a K.
Mm. And
nothing to do with the TV series either.
We get the first moments where you really have that sense of
the
flood, the overwhelming wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are like, it's kind of part and parcel of the trope, at least at this era. But these guys are easy one-on-one. It's just the fact that when the wall comes at you, then you're screwed.
Right, it's the mass.
And we did just kind of skip over One-Legged Priest gave us pretty much the theme of the movie.
Yeah.
If we don't stop killing, we lose the war.
Yeah,
because it's like
everyone we kill becomes them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's go back, because
everyone we think of as a them will literally become them if we're not careful.
Which is just recently I started reading The Walking Dead in preparation for it to come on TV. Mm-hmm. And that's actually an interesting idea contained with that I haven't seen in other zombies stories, is the fact that everybody is already infected. Uh-huh. So when you die, regardless of whether you've been bitten or not, you come back.
Uh-huh.
Ah.
Zombies are always going to come for the blood or the brains. And, I mean, but they seem to not die if you cut off their arm or something. So maybe the proper way to deal with them would just be to give them a quadruple amputation and just, all right,
watch
torso
them,
boy.
Watch them flop around.
Yeah.
Well, the
they can still bite you. You've got to watch out for the head.
Something which now, because of our prior conversation about this movie that you have started reading, it's sitting right next to me on the couch, is World War Z, which is a great novel. We should plug it tremendously and sell it.
You can buy it
in
our
store.
You can buy it in our store in the book section.
And the Zombie
and
Survival Guide.
Zombie Survival
precursor.
Guide, also both by Max Brooks, who is the, strangely enough, the son of Mel Brooks.
Yep.
World War Z, if you haven't read it, if you're interested in zombies at all, and even if you're not, is a great extrapolation of a world, in which zombies.
I'm not into zombies at all, and I'm really digging the book.
Yeah, and it deals with how different cultures and different societies, and really becomes how you deal with it. But one of the things they talk about, just relating to what you were saying, is one of the things they discover too late is that standard procedure, like in combat, doesn't work on zombies. Everything that the army does to win a war doesn't work against a zombie.
Yeah.
Because you can't, you can't
cut off their supply lines.
Yeah, you can't cut off their supply lines. You can't scare them. You can't demoralize them.
Yeah.
And wounding them doesn't make them stop coming.
Shock and awe does not work.
Yeah, you can't shock and awe them. And you can't,
Kid Rock really loud doesn't have any effect.
No, nothing.
And that will stop anyone.
Exactly. So the idea of the army, we think we're so all powerful, but the fact that there are so damn many zombies and everything you know is wrong about how to fight an enemy, that's why the zombies keep winning. They keep coming because we just, we have to rethink everything because of how they operate. They can't be reasoned with, they can't be bargained with, and they won't stop. They're Terminators, basically, without the metal.
Yeah.
We sort of skipped over this, but we were talking a second ago about Dorkman was saying, I'd be the guy that shoots him in the face. And one of the big things about zombies and the horror of it is that you don't have control over what you will become, and you don't have control over the people that you love that have already become that.
Right.
You can't stop the fact that this has happened, and you have to reconcile with the fact that they are dead. That's not them. But, characters will often have a problem shooting their mom in
right.
the face.
Which plays into, one of the reasons I think zombies took hold the way they did. Because zombies haven't been around for a really long time.
As a concept.
As a concept. I mean, there's
not this kind of zombie.
And physically.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah. But, I mean, vampires go back, hundreds of years. Yeah. Werewolves go back. But zombies are a 20th century creation, basically, in the popular culture. And these kinds of zombies, the kinds of zombies we know about, are essentially a Romero creation. The tropes that we know, they reanimate, they want to eat you, and they'll make you into one of them.
You have to destroy the brain to kill it.
Yeah, that's all Romero's creation, basically, from Night of the Living Dead, and more specifically here. The one of the things I think keeps people coming back to it is this idea of what you know, and specifically the people you love, becoming something unrecognizable. I love the bit with the lights turning off in the building.
Which back in them days, you had to just like get a bunch of guys down in the breaker room and give them a cue.
Yeah, exactly. You had to be on the walkie-talkie going, now,
and the helicopter's passing the frame, and go.
It works really well.
And it's cool how that ties into, we've previously established that horror is something you know that is horrifying, and terror is something, backwards.
Yeah.
Terror is something you know that's attacking you and you can't figure out why, and it's terrifying. Horror is, I can't believe this is happening to me or to someone.
Yeah.
And zombies are a perfect crystallization of what horror is.
Zombies are horror, absolutely. Yeah.
Because it's my mom wants to eat me.
Yeah.
Why does she want to? I don't know. It's terrible. I just can't deal with it.
It's something that looks like something that's familiar to me, but isn't. It's very much, we talk about in
your mom trying to kill you is terrifying.
Yeah.
Your mom being a reanimated corpse trying to eat you is horrifying.
Yeah. In visual effects, I mean, and stuff, we talk about the uncanny valley. And the uncanny valley is when something is so close, but not quite right.
Yeah.
And zombies fall perfectly into the uncanny valley because they're almost little conversation on iTunes U about zombies. They talk about with your mom. Your mother's she's not your mother anymore. Is the title of one of the little episodes that they do. And they talk about it's You know, there you've got your mom. You know, you come home and your mom's baking you cookies and stuff like that, and that's really comforting. And then there's the other version where you come home and it smell it's close. You know, it smells like there's cookies and it's all that, but the cookies are all over the floor and your mom's going.
Your mom's eating your dad,
and, you know, and eating your dad because something went horribly wrong during the baking of the cookies.
And
you know, and it's like that is horror, and that's the uncanny.
And if that happened, you know, you would freeze for a good long time.
If she started running at you, you might not shoot her.
Yeah, just getting your head around like wow.
Oh yeah, that and the difference between fast and slow is a very important distinction.
Yeah, which when we get to you know the Snyder version, you know Sarah Polley. Again, shows amazing resilience because she catches on real quick with her husband, you know, and almost too quick to believe, you know, that she could get behind that.
I think it's the kind of thing where you almost need to, you know, I like the music here, like something horrible has
the
just gone on.
Big stinger for just a random car exploding. These guys out in this little,
the most expensive effect in the whole movie.
Yeah, underline it.
These guys in this little camp here, they seem to have a pretty good handle on everything.
They have a pretty good handle on it and everything. And they're enjoying it. They are essentially what morphs into what we see later. That, you know, the people who are just sort of heavily armed and like, let's just kill them all when we see them. You know, as supplies, you know, right now there's still infrastructure left in the world right now. Later on when all infrastructure is gone, it's only these sort of road warriors, you know, who are left, who are still surviving.
Here comes
helicopter zombie.
Oh, yeah. This guy's famous.
With his Frankenstein forehead, which is a setup for a little something coming up.
The blue face paint does not work.
The blue face paint, I think it's supposed to be gray, and then it just doesn't quite work.
Yeah, photographs blue. Yeah.
But
my supposition is the fact that it was probably something mainly carried over from Night of the Living Dead, and they just didn't account for the fact that this was going to be in color, and probably didn't.
But I think one thing that it
do color
it
tests or
actually
anything.
It actually is a little bit going back to the discussion of like race and stuff like that. If we're looking at kind of the living as the minority now, you know, you've got black zombies and Puerto Rican zombies and white zombies, but they're all blue. There's actually no difference anymore. Yeah. They're all one homogenous group.
We are the world.
That would work if they were gray, too.
It would work if they were gray, and I'm saying I think they wanted it to be gray, and it just photographed. Yeah.
Now, here's another taboo sequence coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, wow, where is this movie going to take me? Because, you know, first of all, we just had a head exploding, and we had people's, you know, chunks being bitten out of people's arms in living color. what he's about to do now is, again, kind of like, oh, yeah, I can see a major studio green lighting this scene. About what's about to happen, and again, that's in those days. I mean, a movie that is, I think, is almost the modern day equivalent in terms of the relative sense of brutality and shockingness that came out recently is 30 Days of Night, which is amazingly brutal and actually has a similar scene in it. But now, you know, now you can get away with it. You know,
I would not like he hits the coffee machine. It's like fuck because it's out of order, and then it drops. I would not drink anything.
I wouldn't drink out of that. Yeah, who knows what's in there?
I want to know why people don't.
In fact, if it were made today, I would expect it to start pouring blood and not coffee.
Yeah, that's exactly. What for some strange reason.
There'd be a zombie head inside.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there'd be a zombie head inside.
Now, this struggle I don't quite buy because, like, right here, he totally just puts his crotch in the zombie's mouth.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like he's bitten. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's a leather coat is important, though, to have.
Yeah.
Now again, this is where, you know, it's like, yeah, this could have been staged better. You know, what's going on here makes sense. The idea that... You know, it's like Flyboy can't handle himself, and one zombie might well take him out, and Fran isn't used to doing anything. But the fact that she's just kind of standing there.
Just watching.
And
like,
I think it's, you know, I think it's more of a performance thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it just could have been directed, acted, staged a little better.
Even if her...
I love this.
Yeah, but
this even if all of her concentration
was... This moment here where he's trying to do it, but he's not good at it, is one of the more, like, better moments, I think. You know, he's like, okay, let's just run now.
Yeah.
It's down. Let's just run.
Yeah, she doesn't seem like she's frozen. She just seems like she's waiting for her cue.
She's standing there, but she's not.
She needed something
about
to do
because
it's clear that she wasn't actually. Even if it was just the fact that all of her attention was focused on the one that was walking towards her, that would have been enough.
Yeah. Now here is another scene where we kind of, you know, and this scene is great because it telegraphs. You like you can see where it's going, and it's like, oh my god! And again, in the theater, we're like, I've never seen that before in a major motion picture.
When I saw it, I was like, I can't believe that just fucking happened.
And this is a huge laugh in a group when he just like looks up at the blade, like, yep, that happened. So he's about to waste two toddlers.
Oh, did you see that hand like just on the right side of the frame,
flying in?
Yeah,
going go.
That's awesome. Something to freeze frame. Yeah. So you can't squib kids, though. You have to, like,
cut around it.
You flop back on the couch there. that, yeah, let's play zombies.
It's curious, though, that they're fast. Little kid zombies are
yeah,
fast.
Kid zombies are speedy.
Well,
yeah.
Well, actually, it was interesting because I finally, in preparation for this, watched... I hadn't seen Night of the Living Dead or Day of the Dead, so I watched both just to kind of have a whole sense of... And in Night of the Living Dead, they're not necessarily that slow.
Oh, really?
Like, they're not...
They walk.
They walk. I mean the first one that you see runs. He run. I mean, he's stumbling.
Yeah.
He's not,
yeah,
he's not coordinated. Yeah, but he's running. And the thing is, I mean, you know, it's become a thing where they're rotting, so they're slow, like, especially in this one. But early on, it was like they're just walking because they kind of just got nowhere to be, you know, is what it was. And sometimes they can run.
Yeah, they see the first zombie they see in the first movie looks like a guy walking around
until they
see him up close.
Right.
So here's – I mean, talking about the blue makeup, it's like that guy obviously had a better makeup job because there are featured zombies and then there are, you know, kind of...
Because they knew he was going to get a close-up.
Yeah, kind of quick zombies.
Well, yeah,
helicopter zombie was a featured zombie as well.
The guy that Flyboy was just fighting, you could see the makeup trailing off on his neck and he was full frame.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a low-budget movie and it's not particularly well-made all the time. That's all it is, you know. It's
just,
it's like, yeah, let's put blue paint on him. Get to set. We have this helicopter for 2 more hours. Let's roll. Let's shoot this. So did we look up what was the budget on this bad boy?
I think it was like $6 million.
No, it was like $650,000.
Yeah. This one?
Yeah.
Oh, then Day of the Dead was the biggest one.
Yeah, Day of the Dead was had a budget, but because they destroyed a whole city, at least made it look like a whole city, which is great, but or a city block, which still is tremendous. But it had a fantastic location in Day of the Dead. But this is a low budget movie in Pittsburgh in 1978, so you can get amazing amounts of stuff, and they do. This is a pretty epic movie for an indie film. Of its time, but you know, in the end, it's a low budget movie. Even at the time, it's a low budget movie for what they were doing.
Wow, I nailed it. Budget $650,000.
Nice. They're telegraphing the theme again. Again, it's, you know, ham fisted and stuff. But he's saying, you know, well, not just we're bad guys. The bit with because you know, Flyboy wasn't thinking and almost shot, you know, Peter here. You know, he's saying, you know, he says something about, you know, we might not survive. We might not be able to make it. And what's it? Roger here. He's like, look, as long as we stay ahead of those things, stay away from those things, keep moving, we'll be fine. He says it wasn't one of those things that nearly blew me away.
Yeah.
because people are the real enemy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Even within
are the real monsters.
Even within this group, there's trouble. You know, there's potential conflict. And the trouble, you know, when they ultimately do fail, spoiler, it's because of internal, not external
factors. It's like that Jean-Paul Sartre quote, you know, hell is other people. Yeah. Zombie apocalypse is other people.
Yeah, it literally. It's like, I don't know which one's worse.
Sartre doing a zombie story.
It's interesting, again, a
product
of the time.
WGON has the worst TV logo of all time.
a product of the time, you know. I love that he's just standing. He's like, what?
Fucking that's right.
Blades?
I'm 9 feet tall and I'm not scared of the blades.
I don't give a shit. You know, as they're flying up to this, the first thing that you hear, what Roger says, he's like, what is that? Malls were relatively new at the time, you know. Compared to now, we're like, oh, and it looks like a fortress. And in fact, there's a lot of visual similarities to a prison.
Yeah,
it's very like a prison. And of course, that's the theme. It becomes their prison after a while.
Which in The Walking Dead is they, at one point in the story, they come across an actual prison, which I had never considered before. But like, that's actually a really great place.
That's a good place.
I think that might be in the zombie survival guide. They mention it too. It's like prison would be, you know, keep.
Well, I want to just go to a skyscraper and then block off the elevator and stairs. It's like, all right, second floor, you're fine.
That's more or less Land of the Dead.
Yeah.
Land of the Dead.
Also part of 28 days, I think, or 28 weeks.
28,
one of the two.
28
it's
weeks,
an apartment building.
20, yeah, 28
well,
days. 28, the
28
building,
days, they have one apartment building. The one, the, you know, Brendan Fraser, whoever.
Gleason. Yeah.
And his daughter have barricaded
although
themselves.
They leave there.
Mad-Eye Moody, right?
Yes. 28 weeks is a kind of a military complex.
Yeah.
More of a, where they're trying to repopulate Britain.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what Day of the Dead is also about, too. Day of the Dead takes place in one of the last strongholds, a military complex, because they're the last holdouts. You know.
What's interesting is that apparently all of the stores in this mall are like, you know, a bunch of them are, use our name.
Yeah. Back in the day, they were like, what? Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Hey, can we use your thing in our movie? Yeah, whatever. It didn't really matter back then.
Yeah,
at least people hadn't wised up.
But now, in Dawn of the Dead, they you won't see a Starbucks or anything you recognize in that mall.
There is a. I understand. I have never seen it on screen, but
it'd be funny if Hot Topic allowed their name.
Yeah, that there's a Galen Ross fashion boutique in the remake, which is a little homage to the lead actress of this one. I'm surprised none of the Ken Foray does a cameo in Snyder's remake. I don't think any of the other actors do anything, but. Because Galen Ross only, to my knowledge, only ever did this and Creepshow, which was another Romero film. That was his collaboration with Stephen King. She has a small part in Creepshow that's fun. She's barely in it. It's a very small part.
Romero, like Cronenberg, has one of those all-time great horror names.
Romero.
Romero just works.
It does.
On a phonetic level. I don't know why. It just sounds scary. Or at least important. I don't know. Brian, is this movie working for you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, now we're finally at the point where the movie is actually starting.
It took us 30 minutes to get to the mall.
Yeah, it's called The Beginning of Act Two.
Yes.
So 30 minutes is about right. So we've introduced our characters and we've introduced the world, and now it's time for
to start the story.
Now it's time for the change to begin. So.
Hmm.
So the movie's more or less on track.
Yeah.
But again, there's that old screenwriting advice.
When I was watching it the first time, I was thinking, all right, cut Act One.
But again, we have to remember that's coming from the point of view of we know all these zombie tropes.
Yeah.
As
I pointed out, they did cut Act One. They made a whole movie called Act One. That was Night of the Living Dead. That was Act One. This starts right in the middle of the action. Mm. It's like they don't start with, hey, apparently the dead are coming back to life. They start with the dead have been coming back to life and we're already in the thick of dealing with it.
And so if they're going to do that, they might as well start at the mall, is my thing.
Well, but then you wouldn't have the right setup. Then who are these characters and what are we doing at the mall? I mean, even your beloved Zack Snyder didn't start at the mall.
But he got to the mall in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's because
30 minutes is a long
that's
time.
It's because it's 2009 and you kids have no attention span anymore.
but also because, you know, we have the benefit of
we get it. We know zombies.
Yeah, extra 30 years of understanding how zombies work. This is in a sense, this is like hard sci-fi where it examines the actual mechanics of
this movie wrote that book. This movie wrote that book that you now know, even though you never saw this movie.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, and one of the first responses to this movie actually was Return of the Living Dead, which is not a Romero film. It's a comedic take on this whole setup, which is in which they constantly reference what the movie teaches you,
right?
In which they talk about how do you these people are dealing with zombies, and they keep referencing what the zombie movies have told them this is going to be like, and so one of the things they do, and if you haven't seen Return of the Living Dead, it's a very fun 80s movie with some very funny stuff in it. And a very dark sensibility to it as well. But they just go, well, you destroy the brain, you destroy the zombie. Doesn't work in Return of the Living Dead. And they're so pissed off that the movie lied to them. They're like, the movie lied! So now they have no idea. We have no idea what we're doing now.
But that's where that came from.
That's from Return of the Living Dead. Is where they specifically want brains.
Yeah. Go ahead.
These movies, they just want your flesh.
Yeah.
Return of the Living Dead started the trope of they want your brain specifically.
Yeah. And in fact, Romero's zombies have, and it becomes particularly clear in Day of the Dead and Land of the Dead. They have brain function. There's something there, and they can be, there's Bub in Day of the Dead, and then Big Daddy in Land of the Dead, who can start thinking again. They can be trained and almost domesticated in a sense, whereas, because there's something still in the brain. So it's like if you eat the brain, that doesn't make any much sense at all. Like, because the brain is what powers the zombie. You can't make a new zombie if it eats your brains,
Which is funny. Yeah, they're self-defeating. They're not helping their own numbers that way.
Yeah.
I did script coverage for this producer, and he gave me one that was a zombie film where the main character was completely genre savvy, knew everything about genre, and so it was about him leading these. And had anything in that script happened like what Trey just said, where it's like something, here's the zombie trope,
where they're wrong.
Here's how it's wrong, and a complication like that.
Shit.
Could have been good.
Uh-huh.
Nothing like that in that script whatsoever. Uh-huh. One of the worst
everything
pieces
was right.
of shit I have ever read in my entire life.
Have you tried Hare Krishna?
It won't make you a zombie, I promise.
Yeah.
Well,
that's one of the things that, again, this movie underscores a little bit is is, you know, Galen Ross's character is the one who represents it the most. When you know, she's this idea of you know, you can't think of them as people, but she'll see, you know, she'll see like the nun and she'll get caught up in who that person used to be.
Right.
You know, like there's a nun, there's a nurse, there's a kid with a baseball glove, you know.
And the zombies have little strands of behavior left in them, like the guy grabbing the change in the fountain for no reason.
And that's the, again, that varies.
It's just like money.
That varies from movie to movie. The Snyder.
He doesn't understand why he's doing it, but he just feels compelled to fucking collect coins.
As they'll say more explicitly later on, they come here for
because they remember it.
I think this is a little moment that I thought was really fun where they're you know, okay. He says, bag it or go for it. And Scotty says, I need lighter fluid. And they're like, okay, that's a good enough reason. Yeah. So I think this is the moment when, bag it or go for it. And he goes, what do you think? I need lighter fluid. Let's go. And so then that's all they need. They're moving out.
Dorkman, talk a little bit about why they go after brains. Because that's dealt with in Return of the Living Dead, isn't it? That it's like pain medicine. It like relieves their
zombie Return of the Living
state.
Dead, it says, they're much more conscious in Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah,
they're actually still,
they can talk.
They're still sentient in Return of the Living Dead, and they just have an uncontrollable desire for brains.
There's actually a graphic novel that I read called Dead Eyes Open, which is independent. I don't think most people will have heard of it, although if it's better known than I think it is, then awesome, because it's great. I found it at Comic-Con, and it was one of the most unique takes I've seen on zombies, because people are coming back from the dead, and they're totally conscious. They are completely sentient. They are not compelled to eat flesh or brains or anything like that. And it's the kind of thing – it's just an exploration of – you know, it's obviously very racially – you know, the allegory and stuff like that. And there's this whole thing about how society tries to deal with them. It's like, well, you know, property rights – are supposed to expire when you die, but if you come back, then how does that work? Do you still own the
Now that would be an argument for the repeal of the estate tax,
right,
that I could get behind.
Does the next of kin apply anymore? What if they don't, you know, and there's this whole examination of bringing, you know, what happens to society and the rules, very much the same as this one, when the dead start coming back, but they don't want to eat you. They're people, or are they people, or how does it count? You know, it's very interesting.
Along those lines, have you seen American Zombie?
No,
it's a mockumentary about these recently deceased people that are living in L.A.
No, I haven't seen that one. I want to now, though.
It's on Netflix.
I'm sold.
It was on Netflix streaming a while ago. It might still be there, but it's well done. It's interesting, and it sort of like profiles these four different zombies that are just going about their lives.
That's fantastic.
And it sort of comes to a point where at one point the guy that's documenting them isn't allowed to come with them to this yearly zombie convention, and what's going on there, and that's sort of what the movie is. It's cool stuff.
The secret
zombie. I like it when they're trying to like shove the zombies back. One gets in, and Roger's just like, "All right, fine, fucking get in here then." Like he's just dealing with it.
It's a nicely staged.
Well, because it's like one we can deal with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
50, that's
it's a nicely staged sequence. Again, you know, it's. Again, they're slow, and we've got guns, and how much trouble can we get into? It's like, you can get into trouble.
I would probably have knocked that thing's face off.
If this situation, we were all here, and we were going to set up for the long haul, the very first thing I would do would be to knock down every single mannequin in that place. You're just asking for bad news.
Paint them Day-Glo orange. Like, he's okay. He's a mannequin. I painted him the other day. He's fine.
Set them up at, you know, the exit that you're not going to use, and let them try to draw in zombies if that'll even work.
You'd think
use them somehow.
I think there is a zombie.
You have one awkward afternoon where everyone kind of rubs up against the mannequins to get your smell on it or whatever, and then put it somewhere else.
A scene where there's a zombie dragging a mannequin around somewhere in this movie. I think it's in this movie where he's like dragging one around, but he's not sure whether they try to eat one or not. I don't remember if that happens in this movie or not. Now, one of the things that even at the time, you know, when I was reading more about this movie back in the day and what I ended up writing my paper about was we haven't touched on it yet, is that Romero specifically said what his trilogy is about, or what his, now at the time, trilogy, quadrilogy, quintology, however many he's made, like, I guess five by now.
Five, yeah. Five official ones, yeah.
Although the later ones maybe not so successful. Land of the Dead's okay, but
Land of the Dead is you know, it's another one of those things where it's like, it's not a great movie, but once you kind of think about what he's trying to say, it's like, okay, you did
an
okay job.
And he had more budget. I'm just glad he had more budget.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some fun ideas in it. But and Diary of the Dead I have not seen. But the, you know, his original intent with this movie anyway, his stated point was that his movies are about what happens when an existing society is overthrown by another society with different values. And that's what he said he made these movies about. Not so much in the original Night of the Living Dead. That was just more let's make the most horrifying, scary story we can make. But this movie is where he really started to bring out this theme, and Day of the Dead, all the more so.
Is Day of the Dead the one where they learn how to talk and like coordinate?
One does. No, that's Land of
that's
the Dead.
That's Land of the Dead.
But Day of the Dead starts that. Day of the Dead.
It has a brain gremlin?
There's a mad scientist who's been doing experiments and learning to domesticate them, and he even manages to domesticate one that he calls Bub.
To the point where he can kind of talk.
To the point where he can kind of talk, which is what he was saying, the hello, Aunt Alicia, because he gives him a phone, and the zombie picks it up and kind of remembers what to do with it, and the scientist is like, say hello, it's your Aunt Alicia, and he kind of goes,
Aunt Alicia.
So,
and he's demonstrating to these other guys, a great scene, it's one of my favorite scenes in that movie, where he's demonstrating to these other guys, look at this progress we've made, and everyone's just horrified, like, that's progress? How is that helping us?
But it's interesting, because this zombie called Bub has like a chain around its neck, and it finally figures out how to get away, right? He doesn't get the chain off himself, but he gets it off the wall.
Yeah.
And he like wanders out, and his everything's already gone to shit with the humans. So like his scientist buddy is dead. But he's not out to he's not out to eat anyone. He's going to find the scientist to be like, "Hey, fucking look what I did." You know, he's not he's just amused by it more than anything else.
It's interesting it brings that something that sort of you see in this movie. Just because it kind of is, and I don't know if they gave that much thought to it, but some zombies seem to be a little higher functioning than others, and I think that's Day of the Dead goes into that too. It's like they're not all this way,
right?
But some of them still have higher brain function. They still have a little bit more function to them.
Yeah.
Did you guys see Fido?
I did.
Yes.
And Fido, yeah. Fido, I think comes was definitely inspired by Bub and Day of the Dead.
Oh, absolutely, very much.
Fido is also on Netflix all the time.
Fido is a really interesting movie. Talk about having a heavy-handed message. My God. But
lot of fun. A fun movie, stylized and very
I've only
very
seen
amusing.
The beginning of Fido, but I enjoyed just that idea very much. Like, it's okay, it's the 50s, and it's very stylized. It's almost like Pleasantville.
Yeah, it is. It's Pleasantville with zombies.
Yeah.
It's got a little Day of the Dead. It's got a little post-Shaun of the Dead where they had domesticated them a bit.
Yeah.
Of all people to cast, Billy Connolly.
Yeah,
you know, it's like I
Billy Connolly shows up in a movie and I'm interested.
Yeah, it's what's funny.
That got
what's,
me to watch.
What's
the
weird though is, of course, he doesn't look like Billy Connolly, and he doesn't get to talk like Billy Connolly. So it's kind of like it could have been anyone, kinda. But
it's fun as I recall. I may be confusing this with the Moondog Saints, but like if you watch like the behind the scenes stuff, it's so clearly Billy Connolly in like the makeup. And
I would
everything.
Love to see
it's
him just, like cut loose and turn into Billy Connolly in that makeup. Ah, fuck off!
Yeah.
But so we
while
we're waiting for something really to happen stinger. Other than fucking Flyboy being an idiot.
A lot of this movie was low budget, solo budget. That I believe that some of it, if any of it. Not all the music is composed. A lot of it is library music.
Yeah,
which Dario Argento. Did
there's no music in libraries.
Which they very cleverly kind of get away with by making it the Muzak in the mall.
Yeah.
So
speaking on an unrelated note, but kind of similar to that, do you know for a long time who primarily purchased Richard Cheese albums? Department stores. Richard Cheese is the lounge singer. He does covers of pop songs.
Okay.
He did like, in fact, he shows up in Dawn of the Dead 2004. He does the Disturbed song.
Okay. I was sitting here. I was
down
like,
with the sickness. Right. For a long time,
the
majority of those that bought him were stores that wanted to sound contemporary but still smooth.
That's amazing.
And it's funny because they would beep out all of it because he does nothing but like filthy songs half the time. So it's like,
It was shocking to me. It was shocking to me that song. Had a different version because I only knew that song from Dawn of the Dead, and then like there's a different version.
Then you heard the real
song.
Version.
Oh, there's a really terrible.
Whoa.
Yeah.
No. I think it's also is in the movie. I didn't recognize that was the same song.
He uses it perfectly as in the montage, but it's the credit song. The original is the credit song.
The end credits, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the awesome the type effects.
Trey,
yes.
Tell us your zombie story.
Oh, is it time for the
from
zombie
Jurassic
story?
Park?
I think so. Yes.
I referenced in
what we had with the red herring earlier. We have. Yeah, the actual scare now.
The mannequin. Although
this guy should have
zombie had
again. That guy was lying in wait.
Yeah,
that guy was very.
He basically had set a trap.
He's a smart zombie.
And why hasn't the zombie bitten him about 20 different times now?
Yeah,
it's a little convenient when zombies decide to bite you.
It's like
the zombie could have totally bitten.
It's just not a screwdriver.
It's just a setup for another great Tom Savini effect.
Blort and hit the eyes moving around. What?
Yeah. Oh, hey. Suddenly I can't hear that well.
Okay,
so in our Jurassic Park commentary, for whatever reason, in whatever context, I don't remember how that came up, but apparently I made a reference to a friend's zombie sort of story, and I said I would tell it someday when we did a zombie movie. So, okay, here we go. And we were talking about... it's kind of keys into the idea of how you react when something you can't fathom happens in real life. It kind of speaks to that. My friend Ron, one of my best friends in high school, and this happened back in the day, and Ron was the guy who originally turned me on to The Night of the Living Dead as a movie. He said, you have to see this movie. And I did, and it was, you know, this amazing thing. So he was very much aware of Night of the Living Dead. And he was a camp counselor, a summer camp counselor. And the summer camp counselors, it was, I guess the way it worked is that the campers would mostly stay there the whole week, but often many of them would go home on the weekends, and they wouldn't be here on the weekend. And so Friday night was when the camp counselors would go to the boathouse at the camp and smoke dope and drink and have a big party. And then
that sounds so fun.
And sleep in on Saturday morning. So one night they had their regular Friday night boathouse party, and the next morning they're kind of all, you know, dawn's breaking, and they're all like laying around in the boathouse, you know, half out of their minds. And they hear, like, somebody hears a sound outside and gets up and goes to the window of the boathouse stares and stares and stares out the window of the boathouse, and then finally says, have any of you guys ever seen Night of the Living Dead? And one guy goes, yeah, why? Come here. And the other guy goes to the window, and they're both standing at the window, and Ron's watching this, and says, the guy just like turns white, just like, and the guy goes, oh, it's real. And Ron goes to the window, and everyone's like, what? And everyone goes to the window, and the view out the window was out this, you know, the playing field of the camp. And there's however many people, human figures out there kind of shuffling and staggering around and kind of twirling in circles and with these kind of slack expressions, and everyone's like, oh, and the overrun. So, you know, there was a moment of, oh, my gosh. And being, you know, stoned and hungover didn't help, I'm sure. anyway, the sad politically incorrect punchline is that for the weekend, the camp had been hired out by a group of special children who had just been released onto the playing field, who were just kind of doing whatever they're doing on the playing field. And so if you want to simulate what a zombie apocalypse looks like, there actually are ways.
Get a bunch of mentally challenged kids
in real life that can
be simulated. I was talking about before we recorded, I was looking up the trivia on IMDb, and I accidentally mistyped, and I looked up Dawn of the Deaf. And I was like, yeah, it'd be very similar, really.
And I was talking about how, well, you know, Helen Keller was deaf and blind,
yeah, exactly.
So she'd have her arms out reaching around.
How could you tell she's not a zombie?
She's just walking around with her arms out like, no.
Meanwhile, I was busy respecting people of all different types.
Yeah.
Helen Keller is a hero.
You know,
I was not a part of this.
Dude, you just killed Helen Keller.
There's a book called Truly Tasteless Jokes that has an entire chapter of Helen Keller jokes.
Oh, yeah.
And it also has an entire chapter of dead baby jokes, which we can get to in the 2004 Dawn of the
Oh, yeah. So that'd be the time to tell those jokes.
So stay tuned.
Yeah. Be awesome.
We'll see you next week here on Down in Front.
Yeah. It's a whole festival of dead babies. Yeah. Fantastic.
How many dead babies does it take to paint the side of a barn? Depends on how hard you throw them. And more.
And more. Now she's actually thinking. Yeah. She's thinking now,
yeah.
So it's good.
Not very well, but yeah, she's... But
the lead guy looks
about
like a
the
mix
same level
of,
as the Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
The lead guy looks like a mix of Steve Carell and Hugh Laurie.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's got kind of the...
Their love child.
I was going to say the Bug Eyes thing, but then I wanted to say sorry about the Bug Eyes thing. Do you ever do that before you say it, you want to make the reference, but you have to say it first?
Yeah.
And then you say it real fast and no one else does it first.
And then you trip yourself up in the process.
Yeah. And then,
so
and
your
then,
delivery is all mangled.
Yeah.
And then everyone just looks at you.
That's every day.
Now you gotta, lady, you gotta wedge it. You gotta get the boxes in the corner there. Yeah.
It's one Hare Krishna guy. And I was like, of all things, a Hare Krishna guy.
Trey, in your experience in the 70s, was there a lot of hallways that were painted brown?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Now here they're just brown doors.
It reminds me of my school. It reminds me of my school at the time.
I'm reminded of Ocean's 11. They say taupe is very soothing.
It totally is. And so are road flares.
Now,
Have you tried Hare Krishna?
Where did she get the idea to be like, I'm okay, road flare. Hey, how about that? But again, that's
it must
thinking.
Be, yeah, it must be just like, what do I have? Yeah. I have the bag with road flares.
Exactly.
All
so,
right.
You know, she doesn't
well,
have a gun.
Else I can like poke him in the eyes with the road flare.
Whatever your monster movie is, flares help. We just watched Jurassic Park and it was the same thing there.
Yeah, flares, flares always good.
Flares are important.
I don't know if she knows that, because it's established in Night of the Living Dead and the Romero zombies don't like fire, basically.
Right, they're afraid of fire.
You know,
which
I don't,
comes, which
I,
comes up here, so that
yeah, I don't know applies. If she, I don't know if she knows that or not, or if she's just like, I don't know. I guess if you, in a lot of ways, it's like, you know, people are like, oh, you know, a zombie, you know, shoot its brain out, that'll stop it. I'm like, just about anything, shoot its brain out, and that'll stop it. Like, that's the way to go. So I wonder if
not
her
sharks.
Thing,
sharks.
I wonder if her thing is just like, well, I'd be kind of freaked out if someone stuck a flare in my face. Yeah. So I'm just going to...
Again, I think she's just like, what do I have?
Yeah. Well, she's
going
to she's going to bring up a point, a very valid point later. Yeah. She goes, don't you guys leave me without a gun anymore?
Yeah.
Because they... Yeah, she's a girl. She doesn't need a gun.
Yeah.
So, you know, right. She's like, she doesn't have anything. She's now, like, you know, she could have gone at him with nail clippers. That might have been what she had.
There was a thing. I don't remember the extent of it or the details, but there was a thing that the two guys that worked on Night of the Living Dead together had slightly differing ideas of what the zombies could do. And that some of them weren't Romero's ideas, and he did not continue those tropes.
That's the brains thing comes from the other guy, whose name I'm totally blanking, but you guys.
I don't know. Off the top of my head. Because there were a bunch of people in Return of the, who went on to Return of the Living Dead that were involved in. It wasn't just one guy.
Computer. Okay. Who else worked on Night of the Living Dead?
Hello, computer.
Dan O'Bannon.
Yeah.
Dan
O'Bannon. I wanted to say O'Bannon, but I wasn't sure if it was him, because he wasn't the only
guy.
Well,
no. Dan O'Bannon did Return of the Living Dead. He had nothing to do with Night of the Living
Dead. He didn't?
Though, no.
Okay. So there.
Dan O'Bannon.
Damn you, computer.
Of course, we all know who Dan O'Bannon is, right? Yeah. Right, class? Okay.
Alien?
Yeah.
Space Beast.
Yeah.
To be precise.
Total Recall, Alien, a few other things.
I'm very proud that I knew that. Oh.
Yeah. No, Dan O'Bannon did Return of the Living Dead, which was a jokey take on it, but he was not originally affiliated with
I want Shatner to walk through here with his fleet garb on, just go, anyone hungry? I mean, it's got that same look to it. What movie is that
in? T.J. Hooker, Shatner, or
no? Isn't there a Star Trek movie where they're all sitting in like a room with boxes, and then someone dies, and then he's like, "Anyone hungry?" And he's like, "How can you
eating
want food?"
Oh,
like
that's right.
Caviar and cheese.
Khan. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I thought I didn't know the Star Trek name movie, and I would have gone with that first if I knew it.
They could walk into the mall proper and go, you know, we did this in a day.
Well, The Matrix was built in a day.
Can I cook or can I cook?
Hey, the Matrix
the franchises wasn't... grew at a substantially accelerated rate.
Wow. Okay. That's a pretty sweet radio.
Pretty boss.
Yes, pretty boss. Right, Trey?
Totally. So here
that's how you spoke then, right?
That's what we said.
Those are the words you said. Did you say cool back then?
We said cool, non-ironically. But in Maryland, we didn't say boss. We weren't into that. And we didn't say bitchin', and we didn't say wicked. That's Boston. I didn't say, as I think I've said in some other commentary, it's like, we didn't say dude either. And when I came out to California, I was amused, endlessly amused by people who said dude. And so I would say dude ironically. I'm like, that's right, dude. And then at some point it became non-ironic.
That's what happens. That's always what happens. That's what happens to me with slang all the time. I'll be like, everyone's saying it, so I'll say it to be like ironic.
Word.
And I just end up saying it. That's how my bad took on with me. Yeah.
You know what that is?
Huh.
That's a word zombie.
Yeah. It's a meme.
It's a virus.
Brain virus.
The one that I could never get into was all the kids in my high school would say, man, that's trifling.
What?
Trifling? Could never do it. Could never do it. Because I know what trifling means, and it's not really close.
Yeah, that's not trifling at all. That's not what it
is. Man, that shit is trifling. Like, not
and they
it.
Meant trifling as in not
bad.
Trifling?
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard people say true in the sense of right on. Like, oh, true. I'm like, I can't stand that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. No, I'm sorry.
True. Well, you know.
I had my roommate freshman year of college was from California, and he loved hella. That endlessly
Hella's
amused
big.
Me.
And the fact that we've...
And we should really stop trying to make fetch a thing.
Yeah, we've pretty much universally grasped that bad means good.
Yeah.
That is bad.
That's really a coup for
love,
whoever comes up.
Yeah, whoever wrote that one, I hope they get a
making,
penny.
Making fetch happen is my go-to phrase as like, it's its own fetch happening, because that's my go-to phrase for getting a meme to catch on is making fetch happen.
That's not a bad idea.
I'm sorry, how does fetch work? You can start now. Explain
it's from, it's a reference to Mean Girls, actually.
Oh, okay.
One of the girls in the... I know, I love that movie. One of the girls in the popular clique that wasn't, you know, Rachel McAdams. She was she kept going, that is so fetch, because she was trying to get it to catch on. She was trying to she was trying to make it work so that she could have something that she could claim.
I think it was Amanda Seyfried.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, when Rachel McAdams started being a bitch, she finally turns to her and goes, stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen.
That's just to segue again to another movie besides the one we're watching. That's what was one of my favorite little jokes in Josie and the Pussycats was the
underrated movie
when they Josie and the Pussycats. Go watch it right now. Stop watching this. Stop listening to us. Go watch Josie and the Pussycats. Awesome film. Awesome film. The fact that there's a place where slang is literally invented, and then marketed, and they're trying to come up with slang, and they come up with the phrase jerkin. That's totally jerkin. And then someone goes, I like it. It sounds dirty. And then like 90 minutes later in the movie, you hear people say it using the phrase. You know, it's totally jerkin.
Brian likes to tell this story that happened to me. I was working on a set.
There's the mannequin.
Yeah, there you go. I was working on a set at night, and they were striking, which is when you take down the set at the end of the day. And it's like 3 a.m, and they're taking everything down. And I had, over the course of a few days, even though I had like probably the least amount of experience, I caught on really quickly and was able to move in an authoritative way. And people were like,
because everything on a film set has its own specific lingo.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So it's like, I need some C-47s. They're
striking for like three different things.
Yeah. C-47s are clothespins, but you don't know that unless someone explains it to you and shit like that, right? And people don't want to seem like they don't know. And I sort of was playing with that the entire weekend because I was getting to the more and more people were asking me, like, where should I put this? Oh, that goes over here. That goes over here. Put those in the little case at the bottom of the truck. That's where the sandbags go. Shit like that. And over the course of the week, and I started playing with it. And the last night, I just took a leap of faith and tried to make this happen, and it totally did. They were taking down the lights, and they were like, should we take down this one? And I said, no, leave that. It's a lighthouse. And just kept walking.
Because when you're taking down lights at night, you leave one up, which is called a work light, so you can see to do your actual
or
work.
Or a ghost light. Light. On the theater, light. It's called
a ghost
light.
No, leave it up.
Light.
It's a lighthouse. Just walked away. People were like, oh, it's a lighthouse. Just leave it.
Yeah.
It's a lighthouse.
Booyah!
If I ever work in G&E again, and God willing, I won't. Yeah. But if I do, I'm totally trying to put that into work.
That's a lighthouse.
Now, that's a good one. That is a good one.
We strike everything but the lighthouse. Got it?
Going back.
Yeah, sure. I totally know what that is. Yeah.
It is worth addressing.
Thank you, chat room. They applaud me.
They do make the point, or he's, you know, the TV is making the point during that little montage of zombies wandering around that zombies are technically not cannibals because they don't eat each other.
Yeah. Right.
They eat us, and they can basically be considered a separate species, essentially. So they're not cannibals. They prey on humans, but they don't prey on each other.
So, it's basically a lot like Jurassic Park in the sense that we're just not at the top of the food chain anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Sadly.
Here she is being like, I'm not a girl.
Yeah.
Okay. I want a gun.
I'm a survivor.
And I want information.
I am pregnant, which complicates things a little bit. But other than that.
This is sort of a tone.
Not when it comes to smoking.
Sort of a tone spoiler for what I Am Legend was going to be and Omega Man and all those things. Is there a zombie movie that acknowledges, no, they win?
We are
the ones that are. We're just going to try to deal with it.
This one does.
Day of the Dead takes it even further
because that seems like it's the most interesting. It's one of the more interesting things you can do.
Snyder's
with
in Land of the Dead. Land of the Dead totally acknowledges it's called Land of the Dead. This is their world now, you know, and we're just trying to exist in it. And very much apparently Romero's initial inspiration for Night of the Living Dead was I Am Legend. He was
the Omega Man.
Yeah, he was basically ripping off I Am Legend, but then it got tweaked so much that it's like, well, it's basically not anymore.
But he didn't have the rights.
But actually, if you see the first version of it's called The Last Man on Earth, the first version of I Am Legend, starring Vincent Price, his Romero's Night of the Living Dead owes a tremendous amount. It's a very similar movie. The zombies aren't they're supposed to be vampiristic according to the original novel. They're not true vampires in the folkloric sense, but they're essentially vampires in the original I Am Legend novel. And The Last Man on Earth is a very low budget, black and white, dark movie starring Vincent Price, and it's all about Vincent Price is barricaded in this house. And if you see that movie, then you know Night of the Living Dead is kind of a remake. It owes a great deal to I Am Legend.
I mean. Yeah, the whole thing with and you kind of see it. And Land of the Dead is the most specific because they're the ones who start thinking again, basically.
Right, because they start to form their own social structure.
Yeah, and you know, the whole thing
here's an idea.
What?
What if there's like a Matrix-y thing where it sort of plays out, no, we are the result of what used to be another race that became zombies, and now we're the much more dumb and savage version of our old selves. It happened way in the past. I'm talking about inventing a new story where humans of today that we know are the what was a zombie previously.
We're the horrifying subhuman winners of the war that we destroyed all the good people years ago.
Yeah, man. There was a second renaissance of normal, smart people, and we are the zombies. But then we have zombies, and it's recursive.
If you go back to like the Egyptian civilization, you know, if the Egyptian civilization at its height had continued on, we would be so much further along in our technological progress.
Oh, if we hadn't lost the Library of
Alexandria. I was going to go right to the Library of Alexandria. And who can we thank for that? The Christian Church. Thank you very much. Drive safely.
It's them and also the Muslim extremists came in there and burned it as well.
Skycake.
It was a whole collaboration.
In the Western world, basically, during the Dark Ages, that the Christian Church in the Western world was certainly responsible for eradicating. Which, Name of the Rose, there's a movie you should check out if you want to see a fictionalized version of how that worked.
But I'm just saying there was a saying, we can't just blame the Christians. And it's a very interesting insight.
But it's so easy and fun.
It's a very interesting insight into just religion in general, but happened to be Muslim as well. Their attitude was, if it's not in the Quran, it's blasphemous and should be destroyed. If it is in the Quran, it's redundant and we can destroy it.
Yeah. you just need the Quran. That's all you need.
So
now, we haven't put too fine of a point on it in this recording, but talking about the themes of consumerism and what's going on and what Romero was sort of heavy-handedly saying.
I love this. He's like,
For a second, he was thinking, cool.
I'm going to let this go.
Don't punch him in the face. You could cut your knuckle and that'd be it for you, man.
Really.
At least wear some gloves.
I mean, it's basically a picture of people that are just blind to all their influences shuffling around a mall. That's sort of the visual symbolism that's hard to miss, but I figure we should at least mention it.
Well, sure. It's shopping and never buying.
Right.
It's just shopping, shopping, shopping. You know? And there's a much clearer...
Going into a store to browse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's a much clearer... after the biker gang comes through, we see that much clearer.
Because then
they infiltrate all the stores and we see them doing
and
that.
And they start... Yeah, and there's a whole thing
about
greed.
They start grabbing things that in a zombie apocalypse you would have absolutely no need for.
The living humans are almost just as bad as the zombies. Yeah. They have the wrong set of values, too.
Yeah. They have the totally wrong set of values.
Yeah.
These guys, they go into the bank and they make a joke about, hey, we can take all this money.
Yeah.
How pointless is that?
Yeah, they do.
And then the biker gang comes in and they legitimately grab all the money. It's like, for what purpose?
So this movie is basically...
They say you never know, but it's like, come on.
Yeah.
When I tell you, the closest I've ever come to being in a zombie apocalypse was being in Los Angeles during the Rodney King riots.
Oh, Jesus.
Which was, you know, it's like, wow, I'm watching the apocalypse on television. Because it's like, wow, that's about 20 blocks away. This mayhem is happening. And for, you know, the several days, it was like, I wonder if this is going to stop or it's just going to keep on going.
I wonder if society will ultimately collapse.
Was there a part of you that was sort of excited?
Not excited. There was a part of me. I was more. I'm totally unprepared for any form of social apocalypse.
Because you know, people always talk about, dude, if it was a zombie, I'd do this, and that's sort of a part of the culture now. But faced with the actual reality of maybe this is the end of the world,
I'd be much better equipped to handle a natural apocalypse, like if a volcano or an earthquake. Okay, but if other humans are the enemy, I don't know if I'm prepared for that.
Yeah.
Whether they're alive or dead. But one of the things that struck me...
none of us have any useful survival skills
whatsoever.
Yeah,
none whatsoever.
Vultures.
In the event of zombie war, I'm lunch. So, and we'll be sent out to be lunch by the others. Like, okay, you distract them. While they're eating you, we'll get away. That's good. That's good for the species.
What's the Patton Oswalt bit in his Mad Max?
I'm going to be a snack.
I'll be used as incentive for the other ones to go out and bring gas back.
If anyone wants to get this done. Anyway, so I'm watching the apocalypse on television, and they're looting stores. You know, they're watching people loot stores, and they're breaking in. There's people like running out with big screen TVs and all this kind of stuff. And there's, you know, of course, there's a crazy camera guy documenting this. And one of the newscasters, it was like during 9/11 when the newscasters kept walking this line. The opening of this movie is not so far-fetched, because if you think about 9/11 or you think about the Rodney King riots...
Well, it's really good that it's not 28 Days Later rules.
It totally is.
With all the blood on him.
Yeah, he would totally be a dead man. Anyway, that they still try and walk this line between being politically correct and being television newscasters and dealing with the fact that something really god-awful is happening to humans. And that happened constantly during 9/11 and happened constantly during the Rodney King riots, where... In this one newscaster finally said, which I thought was great. You see people going into this appliance store, and they're coming out with TVs and coming out with all this stuff. And next door is like a bookstore, and one newscaster goes, "I noticed they're leaving the bookstore alone."
Wow!
Holy
shit.
Which is true.
That's like that moment on Sports.
No one seems to be breaking into the Crown books during the riot. I wonder why that is. That's funny.
That's sort of like the sportscaster who just can't help himself but make a racist comment.
Yeah. Well, they're just faster, okay? They just are.
You mean the day and a half Rush Limbaugh was an NFL commentator?
Yeah. That worked out
well.
Was
that a thing?
That was an actual thing.
Wow.
And then he was like, yeah, black people are better at athletics for obvious reasons. And then he was gone.
And then everyone bit their knuckle and went,
gee, what are those obvious reasons, Rush? The other great moment during during those same riots with the newscasters, there was this local newscaster, Channel 7, which at the time locally was the worst news team. And this one bubble-headed blonde, the quintessential.
Who I'm sure works for Fox News now.
Yeah, she's probably with Fox News now. Where they would do these live man-in-the-street interviews. They would just talk to people, just like a guy would flag down someone in the street and start talking to him. And it was live. It was just like 9/11, but local. It was, 24/7. This was going on for the better part of a week here in Los Angeles. And the guy would, they flagged somebody down. I was watching at one point, and they flagged this guy down, and he starts talking about the Egyptians or whatever. He's just going off, well, it all started with the Egyptian, the black man was originally Egyptian, and he goes on this whole thing about, boys, this is your concept of race or whatever. But at some point, he used he used the F word. And they cut away from him really quick, and they're back to the studio with the bubblehead blonde and the guy, whoever was partnered up with her. And she immediately was like, oh, well, of course, we have to remind our listeners and our viewers that this is a live broadcast, and therefore sometimes language might be heard. And the other guy just totally shut her down and goes, Anne, I think our viewers are concerned about something besides language right about now. And just shut her down, which was great because it's like, that guy I like. That guy's like, yeah, the city's on fire.
And you're worried about the F word.
Yeah, you're worried about hearing the word fuck. I think let's just deal with what's in front of us here.
Now,
but the point is, there are semblances of this in real life that people just can't get their heads around what they're facing. So,
they expect it. It's a kind of thing where they expect it to go back to normal at any moment. They're like, oh, this is totally.
Surely the authorities will come and it will be okay.
We will eventually be rescued.
Yeah.
That's a big aspect of
which
of
so far happens. But, there's uncertain times where people are going the wrong direction.
At the same time, you look at, Hurricane Katrina. Yeah. What would have happened if that were The Walking Dead instead of a hurricane?
Yeah, really.
I don't think that would have gone. I don't think it would have gone any better.
Really.
Fortunately, in that case, Obama could outrun them.
Oh, my.
Yep.
For obvious reasons.
That's a good thought experiment, though. Take Hurricane Katrina and
make it zombies.
Basically, once it gets over land, just make it keep getting stronger. And the more damage it does, the stronger it gets.
Ooh.
And it just keeps going.
That would be
tough. That's what a zombie apocalypse is.
Yeah.
You could use destruction footage and locations like they used the shanties in District 9 to tell that story.
Yeah.
That's what, when I was living in Florida, when I was still in college, I think it was 2004, where three hurricanes slammed into Florida within weeks of each other.
Well, that was Florida's fault.
Yeah, it was. Florida was asking for it.
Totally.
But my roommate and I at the time were like, we have a great idea. We'll make a disaster movie during all of this, and we'll save so much money because we'll just use the actual disaster.
Is that when your liberal guilt started?
No.
All these people are out of their homes and probably going to die.
And then someone later made monsters,
it didn't actually, none of those hurricanes did that much damage. But we got but it was funny because a lot of people evacuated the area, but we didn't because it was we can either go to Tampa and it's just as much of a chance hitting us there as it does here, so we might as well stay here.
Yeah, but in Tampa, you could already film the destruction prior to the hurricanes.
No, Daytona Beach is much more of a shithole than Tampa.
Oh, he's got that.
Smell doesn't come across on
dead
film.
Guy.
The weird thing is that they make a big deal out of his leg bite, but he's already been bitten in the arm. He gets bitten in the arm and he just has this reaction like, I can't believe you fucking did that, and then socks the guy.
Oh, that's right.
And then when he's bitten on the leg, he screams.
Well, the leg bite is much more like to the meat. The leg bite is what is incapacitating. Okay. The arm bite is just an annoyance, although that is, a death sentence already.
Yeah, that's the death sentence already,
But they're not, they're not particularly – have they established at this point that it's a guarantee that that's how it works? I guess these guys know. They recognize that that's how it goes.
They know. I think they know, and then we do too. They're basically talking about Peter here is like, that's it, man, it's done, and he's like, hey, you can't shoot me yet.
Yeah, he says, no, we got
to
get this job done.
They never stopped to have that conversation to establish that trope.
Yeah.
They just kind of take it for granted and take it for granted that the audience knows.
Yeah, and then later as he's on his way out, he says, he says, you know, don't
I'm gonna
let me
try real hard.
Try not to come back.
Yeah. So it's established that they know that's how it works.
And we've totally...
It's one of the few things that they don't just smack the audience in the face with.
We're past the sequence now, but the idea of that setup was they're going to do this thing, and they're going to have Flyboy in the helicopter overhead doing recon or something.
Yeah, what is he there to accomplish?
But he has no absolute, like, no way of communicating whatsoever.
So he's just there going, oh, shit! Yeah. Oh!
And try and get their attention by hovering dangerously close to them.
And wasting a lot of fuel.
Yeah. Yeah, it was production value that wasn't particularly well thought out, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Here we're jumping into a gun store that clearly is not part of the mall.
Yeah.
some other store.
Yeah, there's a lot of really fortuitous stores in this mall. Guns and a hardware store, I don't think I've ever seen in a mall. I don't think I've ever seen a grocery store in a mall.
Hardware and grocery stores, yes.
Gun stores
in a mall?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's you can actually see it in the wide shot. You can see that there's an A&P in that mall.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a hardware store or a grocery store in a mall.
Hardware store, absolutely.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
And this was...
I've seen Sears. Sears has hammers.
Malls have evolved a little bit over time.
You know what would be a great setup for a zombie movie like this? You know how... I think it's a Chris Rock bit where every town has two malls. The new mall and the old mall that nobody goes to anymore.
The mall the white people used to go to.
Yeah. Go to to have these people hold up, but in the shitty mall where there's nothing left but like the 99 cent store.
Yeah.
And you have to do all your supplies from the 99 cent store.
There was a mall like that in Harrison, Arkansas, where I used to live. And I swear to God, nothing happened at that mall. But I went there once to get an Animorphs book because I was trying to get laid. And the entire mall was full of old
ladies.
We'll
come back to that.
Did you say Animorphs?
We're going to come back to that.
It works. Man, don't blame it. It works. Every girl loves Animorphs.
Okay.
Just let it go.
Along the outside of the main like hallway tile area, there was this like row of tiles that was brown. And you could just – it was a loop. And these old ladies would just walk the line around the mall. Yeah. Do it all day. And I didn't realize at the time, but there's a perfect parallel to Dawn of the Dead and that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Where these old ladies are hunched over and just sort of shuffling along this line inside the mall. That's totally fucking abandoned.
Oh, yeah. I did a job at the
mall. I was too young to be terrified.
Did a job at the Mall of America. And, you know, the biggest mall in America at the time. I think there's a bigger one now. But I did a job at Mall of America, and I would sometimes have to work weird hours and be there late at night and early in the morning. And I would come out at 6 in the morning, and there'd be little old ladies walking around the mall. And they would even open the mall for that purpose because it's Minnesota. And it's, you know, it's
and ice, they're
you know,
kind.
Exactly. It's like these little ladies want to get their exercise. And so they literally, you know, whatever hours they would open the main doors of the mall because it's a huge enclosed indoor space that they could walk around.
There's some weird kind of, I don't remember what it is. And
before
I'm,
there
like,
were old ladies, there were malls there.
But there's like,
waiting for the old
there's
ladies.
Like a, there, they do like a 10K in that mall. Does, because it's just this big space and it snows.
A big climate-controlled space.
Exactly. So
people in the chat room are confused. Of course I wasn't getting lay when I was reading Animorphs. I was being self-deprecating. Don't people know that Animorphs is a perfect tool for sex? It happens all the time. If you flip the pages, it turns from a guy to a bug. It's a perfect...
Yeah, it makes chicks dig that. Mm. This scene, this cracks me up till to this day. The fact that they're toting him around in a little lawn cart. You know, this is where the movie starts to like really start to play with the premise that it's set up. It's like, okay, we're at a mall. We have every gun in the world. And we have to get rid of all these zombies. So we're just going to use every tool at our disposal. So we're going to start by toting the wounded guy around in his little golf cart, in his little garden cart. And then they're going to up the ante by having the car. And the fact of the car. And I as we've said, other movies sometimes come to people in a dream. Like, you know, Jim Cameron had a vision of a metal skeleton in fire and came up with Terminator based on that dream or whatever that was.
Quentin Tarantino wanted to see Hitler in smoke and he made Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, I think that Romero woke up one night going, I want to drive a economy car through a shopping mall shooting people in the head.
Russell wanted to attack someone with a giant snow machine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it turned out to be me in that case.
Yeah, I think this is interesting that she decides, hey, let's use the car.
Yeah,
it's
use
like,
the car. Yeah.
Haven't we established that gas is a thing in these stores? Like, what makes you think that car has gas in it? Which does, apparently. It's got a full tank.
Well, it got there somehow.
But, even though it's on the showroom floor.
Yeah. It got there somehow.
Yeah,
so
it's not necessarily safe. They probably would have pushed it rather than driven it through the mall. But, you know, I've seen worse in movies. I've seen worse justifications in movies.
God, they punched so many of
them
right in the face.
Yeah, don't punch
them.
You cut your hand, man. You cut your hand.
This is a good little tense moment.
Yeah, where he's like, okay, whoops, wait, we didn't think this one through.
Yeah.
We didn't quite set this up correctly.
But is this a scene where it seems like, I think it is, where it goes on for like 15 minutes, he's trying to get the keys off his
belt. Watch this. One of the zombies, it shuffles up and like knocks the blowtorch over and it burns her foot. And right before the cut, you can see the foot go,
it rolls away. Yeah.
Yikes. But it cuts away really quick because it's like, oh, that zombie. Yeah. Here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah, she's like, yikes.
Yeah. It's probably not so much the fire. It's probably the nozzle.
Yeah.
It's like the nozzle landed right in her skin. Yikes.
So, and here's the nun.
Yeah, got the nice nun, which doesn't, she doesn't even have a mark on her. She just died of being a nun.
Yeah, died of nun.
Yeah. Cause of death, nun. Thank you. Drive safely. It's our special Friday night edition of Down in Front Catholic version. There you go.
Nice. See? Kablam. That's a nice sound. Now, some
now
of
this,
the...
Oh, this is a nasty one. It's egg tempera blood, but still the idea of
this
a
is
squeeze.
Just digging the thumb in.
With the... Ooh. Oh, with the... No.
He plays it well, too.
Yeah, it's just the writhing where he's just like, oh, that was painful.
That's
that
just rubbing salt in the wound.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, quite literally.
Or a thumb.
Well, yeah, thumb in the wound.
Sticking thumb in the wound. And she's just like, okay, just get on with it.
And the fact that the nun goes away, like, okay.
Yeah.
No,
all right. Okay. I'm going to eat you. Go away now.
I'll see you in confession.
There's some other people over there I should really be eating right now. So
that's a much easier goal, I think.
I can't eat you on a Friday.
Nice.
Thank you. Another one of my Catholic jokes. Hey, it's a VW. What is that? That's a
thing.
That's not a thing.
No, I know.
It's not a Vanagon. That's so not the same.
You can see
person.
The trail of blood from the last take.
Yeah,
this is
low budget.
Yeah, well, this is one of those things. I mean, you know, they shot in this mall after hours, like between closing and opening the next morning. So you just got to imagine the people who were like, "Yeah, sure, use the mall." You know, people just shuffling around or whatever. Then they look at like this scene and they're like, "What the
what
fuck?
Yeah.
What did you do to our mall?"
The kind of thing you hope they don't find out until they come to the screening. Like, there seem to be some tire treads. Yeah, I think that's from the camera cart.
And you know, totally when they made this arrangement at the beginning, you're like, "Yeah, we won't even wear like black soled shoes."
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, no, we'll
make sure there's no scuff marks.
Be totally quiet. Yeah, the fact that this is not, you know. It's not like the Blues Brothers Mall, which is a mall that they, you know, built to destroy. This is a mall that they're shooting in. I would love to hear the, you know, production phone calls. Hi, we'd like to shoot a movie in your mall.
Yeah.
What kind of movie?
They got it because Romero knew the guy who owned the
place. Is that it?
Must be. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to. Yeah. Pretty much.
Like, if I remember the story right, the guy who owned the place, like, offered it.
Like, you ever want to shoot a movie here? And Romero was like, ding.
This is their tortilla factory.
Yeah. Basically.
Well, that guy who did, one of the zombies got really close to the car and then did like a twirl. It clipped him. It probably did though.
I mean, this is nuts. This would be a career high for me. To shoot a scene with a car. You're going to drive this car around the mall. See how they're not squealing the tires, though. We don't want to be scuffing the mall.
You go ahead and pump the brakes.
Pump the brakes gently.
On that note, no one wear Dark Souls shoes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can we all wear sneakers, please?
If they were all, why are they all wearing those shower caps on their feet?
Yeah. What's happening now?
They're finishing locking up.
Zombocalypse.
It's actually the little tag at the end that we're going to assume that they complete their mission.
Yeah.
Because we're going to do the cut to
the empty mall.
There's dead zombies in the mall. That's clearly Bonnie Tyler there. That was Bonnie Tyler. Just, can I sing Total Eclipse of the Heart for you? And Richard Dreyfuss in a can. Yeah.
This is creepy and weird.
It is.
Of all the things going on. Because he's not even trying. He's just kind of staring at her. He's like, stop. Yeah.
And just what is like, you know, if you open the door, like, oh, come on in. He like, go, okay, I'm going to eat you.
Yeah.
You know, he's just not aggressive about it.
I guess I can.
This must be what it's like to go to a bar when you're a hot girl. Just have these
pretty
guys.
Pretty much, yeah. They come at you and call it different ways.
Staring at you like you're in glass.
Some are more aggressive than others.
Staring at you like you're just a piece of meat.
I want to eat you.
Yeah. Can I?
Double entendre.
Yeah.
Front.
Yeah, the kind we're known for.
Comedy.
So anyway, notice how they're not too crazy with the gore. Because, you know, we got to be out here by 6 a.m. So there's a nice little.
So this was a mall during the day.
Yeah,
every single day they would
strike. It's a mall at night too.
Yeah,
but this was a function.
At night it fights crime.
They would strike the mall every night.
Yeah,
and then or strike the set every night and then go back to being a mall for the day.
Yep.
Yeah. And they shot it during Christmas, so there were all these Christmas decorations.
So
for a
little while they take them down and then put them back up, and then they're like, "That's retarded." And so they stopped production for like a month or two until the holidays ended.
Look, I never
And then they only had about a month before they went back up. You know, before Christmas season.
I never noticed
again,
that before.
So.
He made a chair out of cardboard boxes. Did you see that?
No,
pretty cool. He's a resourceful fellow. That's why he's surviving the zombie apocalypse.
Knowledge of cardboard helps.
Yeah,
you can do amazing stuff with cardboard in the zombie apocalypse.
It's not even that bad. But see, so I can look at this one. I can look at that.
Exploding head, and you're fine. You know, but
needles. I can't even. No. But it's already in his arm, so it's more okay.
Yeah, because they didn't even have the trick needle. They just, like, pushed a needleless, you know, syringe up against his arm.
Do you have a problem with staples?
In my arm.
In people, yes.
Well, I was just thinking about, like, the other day I was watching the behind the scenes on Indiana Jones, and there's the scene in Last Crusade where they couldn't keep the hat on, so Harrison Ford staples the hat to his head. I'm just wondering, like, where...
That did
where...
not happen.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
That was a joke.
It's a joke in the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's...
He didn't actually staple
it. No, not in the movie. Not in the movie. No, I started that by saying I was watching the behind the scenes. And it was like something that was, I don't know if
he
actually
didn't.
Connected it to
no,
his
head.
No, he
didn't.
No.
That was a joke.
It looked there like were no staples in the stable game.
Yeah.
It's a bit.
But now the wrestler, on the other hand, that's a little
oh my God.
Yeah.
That does happen in The Wrestler.
Yes, it does.
I had forgotten almost everything about that movie.
Oh.
It's a good movie.
It is a good movie.
It's a really great movie. Anyway, zombies.
Going on. Something about
a movie
staples
about as far removed from The Wrestler as possible.
Yeah,
this one's actually, this is one of those moments where it's like, okay, this is a movie written in the 70s, and they're like, hey, we got him, didn't we? Yeah, we sure did, pal. You know, it's like, no one ever talked that way, even when they were dying of zombie flu or whatever the hell. No one. That's just a movie thing.
Okay. When you're dying of zombie flu, I'll make sure not to call you pal.
Yeah.
Don't patronize me, Trey.
Exactly.
When I'm dying from zombie
when I'm
flu.
Dying of zombie, don't call me pal.
I like this. This is very clever. They're like, oh, we'll just cover it up. So... No one will find it.
And
although I would have made it, more solid.
I would have barricaded it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're you know,
they obviously have the 2x4s and the tools. Just
if they're not planning
make a
to,
solid wall.
Yeah. If they're not planning to use it again anyway,
yeah.
It's not like it's a swing away wall. They're just trying to get rid of that section.
Right.
It's like don't make it just a facade. Make it just rebuild the wall.
Well, they're
can make it faster.
The thinking.
Better.
You know, you could be right. Obviously, if they'd only known the rest of the movie, they would have done that. But they are just taking an abandoned, you know, empty corner in a shopping mall in which, just in case someone ever comes here. So it's not like they're making a, you know, we're going to have to hold this position someday. It's like, we're going to make it look like there's no door here. And then no one's going to walk up to this piece of wall at random and go, you know what? I bet there's a door there.
Yeah.
So the problem is only that Steven, who comes back, he does know there's a door there. That's why it falls, because he knows where to push.
Imagine you're at the place that you currently live and a zombie apocalypse is happening outside. What do you do?
Where I currently live?
Where you currently live.
I'm in a pretty good place for that.
I would not be. There's too many doors.
You have like glass doors and stuff.
Yeah, I'd have to.
But you
leave.
Have swords.
It depends on what kind of zombies though. Because
we have swords. We're good.
Even Snyder zombies.
Oh, dude, we do have swords.
Yeah. I've
even Snyder zombies seem to have trouble getting through plate glass doors.
Yeah. I've
except the husband at the beginning who smashes through the windshield fairly easily.
Yeah.
Go figure. It's definitely the kind of thing for me, you know. If someone like runs into my house and tells me there are zombies outside, it's, you know.
Have you thought about this?
It's the wiser thing is to just go with it at first. You know, the skepticism is not necessarily wise. Like if he's fucking with you or whatever, there is no harm in going with it just to find out.
You're applying Pascal's wager.
Yeah, exactly. Pascal's wager. It's like it's better to assume at first that it's true, and if it's not, then maybe you look a little foolish. But if it was, you're not dead,
and you had that time to prepare.
Yeah. Well, so I've always said, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, prove it or whatever. My first question is, are they fast or slow? That's the important question. Because if they're slow, you've got some time. If they're fast, you better get on your toes.
As Hanel says,
quick.
Romero or Snyder.
Yeah. Exactly.
So not prepared.
As that awful script I read said, Romero or Gunn. Chris Gunn was the screenwriter of the Snyder version.
Ah.
James Gunn?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I didn't even make that connection.
Interesting.
So here's the bit where, you know.
They're really settling in.
It's consumerism run rampant.
Yeah. They're not really appreciating. I mean, sure, they can shop, but fucking why? Okay, the candy I get. But
what's the point of having a hat or a
fur
coat? Yeah.
Well, it's the point of being able to indulge everything you ever wish you could do.
Yeah.
It's like, I can just have anything I want, you know.
And
they do. And
where does it get me? Yeah.
Brian, what would you do in a zombie apocalypse?
Well, I like the idea behind this movie in the sense that I think zombie movies and these kind of setups for a movie in general are very well set up for just, we're going to take these group of people, put them in one spot, and watch them over the course of years. And I feel like this movie could have explored, if it were a tighter, more well-constructed film, it might have explored that idea more often. And if it were me doing this kind of film, I would focus it more on that. And I would have a scene like where he's just grabbing the hat early on. I would have basically this sequence set up way earlier and have show him seeing grabbing the hats and show the wall of other hats there. And just about the rest of the movie, every scene he'd have a different hat. Just to show, because that's a very simple way to show up the passage of time. And, you know, the way she does makeup later on, you could have her just with these different crazy makeup jobs throughout the entire rest of the movie. Eventually, you could have other characters with different crazy
makeup. That
would
makeup. Be well, hysterical. And her makeup job just gets more and more kind of crazier, insane crazier. And breaking well, down.
Or eventually, she's the Joker.
Yeah.
Or if you were George Romero making this movie, you'd make her get visibly pregnant to show how the passage
that's
is
true.
You would also do
that's
that.
True. Yeah. And that's what he does. So that was his choice.
Trey, I get to blame you for these video games.
That's because you, know,
you were there.
These are like a baby's toy. Yeah.
Look, I love this. It's like a card. It's rotating. That's really clever.
Yeah.
Look at the Enterprise.
There. I actually did Star Trek game. Yeah,
Star
Trek game. Yeah, and
man, that blew up hard.
Yeah, it really did.
Those pixels were all over the place. Yeah.
I actually played that driving game at some point in my life.
I played the driving game, and it really is like it, this. You sort of get the impression this doesn't even do anything.
Yeah,
it's like you can hit something. You can.
That
it's
car
like,
just drove right over.
That's
the
what I'm
car.
Saying. It's like it had no kind of. It's like it just kind of spins and you kind of turn and that's it. And that's there you go. It's you know it's a quarter.
It's a non-interactive video game.
Yeah, I've played Halo Reach, and you, sir, are no Halo Reach.
Yeah,
so it's modern art.
Yeah,
it's just this audio-visual display that I will enjoy.
James Gunn went on to write Slither. I love Slither
and direct Slither.
Slither is great.
And PG porn.
PG porn. I love Slither though. PG porn was fun. The one with Nathan Fillion was fun.
Yeah,
the idea is funny, and Nathan Fillion is funny.
So here's where they basically state another version of the theme, and the as close as an explanation as Romero ever gives. There's a hint about the satellite. We think a satellite fell from space in the first movie, but
a really awful. Sciencey attempt at justification.
Yeah,
there was Venus radiation on the space probe. That
exactly,
came back.
But no one ever confirms that, or yeah. You know, they certainly don't make a plot point out of it. It's the MacGuffin. It's the and then zombies come to life. Okay, anyway, here's the story.
Yeah,
it's the magic beans. There's some, for some reason the dead are walking the earth. But this speech here about, you know, maybe if we want to go a spiritual direction with it, you know, my granddaddy the voodoo doctor said that when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. I'm like, well, that's as good an explanation as any. That's as good a one as we're gonna get.
And that kind of makes sense if you think of heaven and hell in the Western sense, where it's like hell is down in the center of the earth and heaven is in the clouds. Yeah. Because
so,
the center
so
of the
hell
earth
is finite.
Yeah, the hell is small, and the plane that exists as it wraps around the sphere of the earth is huge. So we should actually flip them.
Yeah, really, more people are going to hell. Just
yeah, yeah. So we should put that above.
So,
yeah.
According to the mythology. Yeah,
so
but,
we'll get filled up. Yeah. So it's like a landfill. We have to think about that.
There was an interesting...
Unless you're a libertarian, then you just don't worry about it.
The conversation about zombies in literature and stuff like that, they reference a book on these are the ways the world could end, basically, like different examinations of the various apocalypses. And apparently it's none of them, you know, neither of the guys talking wrote the book, but they were talking about it. And it actually skips over the zombie apocalypse.
Aww.
For an interesting reason related to this. Basically, the book says if the dead have started walking again, then clearly God is involved. I'm not sure I agree.
Because there is no physical real-world explanation for how that could happen.
It's like if zombies are walking again, clearly God is involved. And if God wants to destroy you, as in the flood and these other things, there's not much you can do about it, so there's not much point
in
discussing
how you fight
it.
Against God. Although there are some movies that have tackled that topic.
There are some
movies.
Most famously, Star Trek V.
Sure.
And Legion.
Yeah.
Recent Legion.
I was watching all the Star Trek
movies. I'm not
sure
I necessarily agree with that, but
I was watching all the Star Trek movies, and Brian was like, oh, it's great that you're doing this, but skip 5. And I'm like, well, what happens in 5? He's like, they find God, they shoot an ion cannon at God, end of movie.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, it's just the fact that I had just come home, you were just finishing Star Trek 4, and it's like, oh, I'm in the mood for a good Star Trek film.
Oh, I don't want to see that one, though.
So we should.
Nope.
I'm in the mood for a good one, so let's skip 5.
And I don't know if I've acknowledged that on the show or not. Yes, I ended up watching all of the original series movies except for 5 for that reason, and I really liked them. So who knew?
Which means we're going to do them eventually.
Well, we already did 6. I wasn't here, but 6 has been done.
I can't wait to take that first one to the cleaners.
Well, that looks weird. He looks like he's
a little force
it's a bad crop or something.
Well, no,
it
looked out of scale. It looked like it was like a force perspective trick.
I like that the camera is moving around for no reason.
Here's Francis.
They've totally given up on like trying to maintain a set of any kind.
Yeah,
yeah. Then this guy's still wearing a tie though. You know,
no, they're both wearing a tie.
Yeah, they're both still nicely dressed. So where are these guys hanging out? In the middle, you know,
this guy with the eye patch. It's very interesting what he's doing because he's basically saying the things that make sense, but they're sick in a way. He's basically saying they are in charge now, and they're hungry, so we should feed them. Mm-hmm. And it's not really clear what he's quite saying there, but it seems like he's...
Mein Führer, I can walk!
Yeah, it seems like he's saying we need to sacrifice, I guess, the undesirables, quote-unquote.
Which they go into a little deeper in Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
You know, so to expand on that a little bit. The
Does that count as hanging a lantern?
What?
What he's doing in that case? If he's saying things that people are thinking, but it sounds crazy, is that still hanging a lantern?
No.
No. I don't think
hanging a lantern is pointing out a flaw in your story.
A flaw in the movie, just
by having
a
person go, "That's weird, isn't it?" Yes, it certainly is. Moving on.
Yeah. That was lucky timing, wasn't it?
Yes, it sure was. Or Steve Zahn, my favorite line in Sahara, as I mentioned before, where they do this crazy plan and it works, and he goes, "There's no way that should have worked."
Yeah.
That's hanging a lantern. Now, this is a great scene. A great low budget scene, but
not the
TV thing, which is less than convincing. I think the TV thing would have been more convincing if it was a locked off camera.
Yes.
The idea that there's no camera operator and no switching going on.
But what he's saying, here's a good example of intercutting, because what he's talking about is we need to be unemotional. We need to let go of the idea that this is mom and dad.
And then
they're gone. Yeah. They're dead. These are not people.
And here's your buddy in a makeup job they spent some time on.
And he says what he repeats is we have to be unemotional.
Are there any examples of zombie films where the idea of curing people is taken seriously as a significant part of the plot? Because usually it's kind of a hand wave. It's somebody goes, "No, we can't kill them. It's my mom." You're like, "No, your mom's gone. Deal with it. Shoot him, and let's move on."
How do you even begin to test a zombie for cures?
Well, you capture them. That's what they're doing in Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead deals with that. So does I Am Legend.
I Am Legend,
for that
matter. I Am Legend deals with that. That would be a very interesting. You could almost pull a like The Mist in a way if you have a whole thing where you're killing a bunch of them and then you discover, oh, we could have cured them.
Yeah. That in that case, it goes back to just being plain old murder.
Yeah.
And then what are the ethics behind that?
Yeah.
The original ending of I Am Legend.
Yeah. In a way. Well, he never found that he could cure them in the movie.
No, he does. He cures them, but then he realizes that they don't need curing.
Yeah. They're not the ones that are broken.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd want to be buried in a shopping mall. I guess it's okay.
Well, would you want to live in a shopping mall? That's really the question.
I guess if I lived in a shopping mall, I'd have to be buried in a shopping mall. That's just how it works. But they could freeze them in the skating rink, couldn't they? I'd like to be cryogenically frozen in the skating rink.
Yeah, maybe bring me back when we figure this thing out.
So what does that consist of? Just laying down in the middle and having the Zamboni run over you?
Yeah, pretty much. That's how we deal with death in the new world.
Of course, the one black guy in the world
has to be the waiter.
Golly.
Class system still just hanging on.
You would think. My gosh.
Civilization, damn it.
Yeah. Some things have to be preserved.
Yeah.
One of the things that they don't deal with in this movie. They touch on it. They make one. They do a hand wave. They basically hang a lantern. They literally do hang a lantern on one thing that I can think of in this movie. I don't think they even hang the lantern in Zack Snyder's movie. Is the electricity still running?
Yeah.
So, oh, they do. No. They and it's a weird.
Oh,
no,
Snyder's is like they have the little generator thing.
Well, in
there's
this
a whole
one,
subplot. In, this one they say must be nuclear.
Must
that's
be
all
nuclear,
they say.
Yeah.
That's the hanging lantern.
Great.
It's like, it's probably nuclear. Yeah.
Nuclear mall.
Because nuclear power plants run by themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They totally are self-contained. However, you would think that a place like a power plant is a place they would probably try and keep going as long as possible.
Yeah.
And probably be heavily defended and they would try and keep those going. So
whatever the nearest power plant is, there's another enclave of survivors.
Yes. That's where I'd go. It's like, let's go to the power plant because clearly there's people working in there.
That's true. It's true. Someone's keeping that rolling.
And that's why, I mean, in this, if we had a zombie apocalypse now, even though Guy was involved, that's why I wouldn't
buy that. I don't necessarily buy that. Just because,
well,
you know, even
a 28 days later viral apocalypse.
But even if it's literally the living dead. But
if it's a viral apocalypse and they're not the living dead, then maybe they could be cured, which can be.
But in terms of like God being involved, I'm like, just because even if we discover there is an afterlife, that doesn't mean there's someone in charge of it.
Right.
Just because there's an afterlife doesn't mean there's a God. That's my opinion. I don't agree with her saying God must be involved because that's not necessarily true. But go ahead.
What I was going to say is, as a result of
you are a former Christian
of the cultural influences of zombie movies, and now we all have these plans about what we're going to do. In fact, I just posted a thread on Down in Front and on my Facebook about here's what I would bring. And people were talking about what I should have changed or what was up. But it was the consensus was all right, duffel bag.
Not bad. Yeah.
If you're not going to be moving around, having it in a duffel makes kind of sense.
I just do want to say they there's a bit they skipped here, and I think it's funny they go directly from she refuses. Proposal, but they're still in bed because why buy the cow?
Scandalous.
But
she's already pregnant, so it's already
exactly. But there's actually in the extended In the extended version, there's a larger scene. She turns him down, and then they got nothing else to do, so they kind of go shopping again. And I'm not sure this sequence belonged right there, but I feel like it was actually good and possibly could have been in the film. Because they're wandering around and doing stuff, and then he catches her. He's like, hey, and he's got a camera, and he snaps it at her, you know, being cutesy and romantic like people do. And then she goes, that's great. When you use up the roll, we'll drop it off at the drugstore. And she walks away, and it's like he's just sitting there like, that's true. Society has collapsed, hasn't it? This is no longer worthwhile or interesting. So it's just the idea of, you know, the things that matter to you don't matter anymore, you know? And it's a very
All the little motions that you go through that are important to you just make no difference.
Yeah, and it was
taking your picture.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And I'm like, I wish they'd kept that because that was really showing the decline of this mini society going on.
There was realizing
that none of this means anything.
Yeah. The computer says there was a bit in the stand where they're trying to get the power plant back on.
Oh yeah, that's a major plot point in the stand.
Anyway, what I was getting at earlier is because of the cultural influence of zombie movies, if a movie like Zombie Apocalypse happens, I'm not going to go to the bank and I'm not going to go to the convenience store. I'm not going to go to the grocery store because that's where everyone's going to go and they're going to be infected. Some portion of them will be infected.
Do not go to the hospital. And that's where they're going.
Right, exactly. So
those are going to be the first to go.
That was one of the things that this guy, Dorkman, had been talking about, though, had the iTunes U thing. He gets asked all the time, so what are you going to do? He's like, I'm going to stay in my fucking house. How about that? Yeah.
Don't try to help. Don't be like, my mom's across town, I got to go help her. A, she's probably a zombie already. B, you probably won't make it, and you'll become a zombie and part of the problem. Stay in your fucking house.
Yeah. Right, and that's one of the interesting comparisons between this movie and the next one that we're going to do, the 2004 remake, which is that in this movie, they decidedly don't try to help people. They don't want outsiders in. Once they're in, they try to kill the zombies, and then when the biker gang comes in, it gets all fucked up. In Dawn of the Dead 2004, they go out of their way to help people. They bring in the people in the van.
They don't go out of their way.
Not everyone.
They help the people who come to them. They don't...
Well, yeah, in any case, they help people in a way that they don't in this one, and that's when it goes to shit for them.
Yeah.
A friend of mine lives down in Seal Beach, and as another friend of mine, he literally lives on the beach. He does very well for himself.
With the seals.
But as my other friend pointed out, he lives basically a stone's throw from the Naval Weapons Station that's right next door to him. And so he's like, as my other friend pointed out, he chose wisely because it's a quick hop to the Naval Weapons Station, and he's good.
Let me in. If anyone's going to make it, it's going to be this place. Yeah.
If it's going to blow up, you're going to die immediately. It's like Professor Falcon in War Games. I'm going to Portland. That's where it's going to blow up.
They got the Lucite chairs. Look at that. Now that's 80s, man. That's 70s. Got the clear plastic chairs. The height of luxury.
And here
she
is.
What the hell were people thinking?
it's hard to explain.
Even though earlier, you know, she said, I want a weapon. I'm not going to be your den mother and blah, blah, blah. Nope.
Unfortunately, she's pregnant now.
That's how things turned out.
You know, it's like she can't be climbing up the ladder to play racquetball with Peter. That's just not how it works anymore, unfortunately. And they do have a pretty good gun rack, so.
I'm like, see, he still doesn't get it. He's fucking, look at all this money. No.
He's dressed up.
It's Monopoly money.
A lot of time's gone by, but he still dresses nice for dinner. They're maintaining this semblance. You know,
A lot of nice to dress. That's true. Really.
They got this sort of, you know, sham existence.
I wonder where they shower.
You want to know how you know this is a set? There aren't holes all around the dartboard. Nobody's that good at darts.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Now this is an interesting moment and the trigger, and unfortunately she goes and, you know, says it explicitly in a second, but, you know, the way he walks to the TV, he's shuffling like a zombie. It's clearly, you know, he's just kind of and he turns it on and he just kind of stands there, and it's like they realize this is the moment where they realize, oh my God, we are zombies. We may still be alive, but we're just going through the motions just like they do. And that right after this, when they're, you know, she's like, what have we done to ourselves? And the next thing we see is they're packing up the helicopter because they're like, we got to get the fuck out of here.
And one of my few complaints about the Zack Snyder reboot, which for the most part I think is great, is that somehow Sarah Polley comes to that conclusion in 4 days instead of 4 months. And everyone else goes, yeah, you're right. You know, it's like, as if they've apparently seen this movie. They go, yeah, you're right. Eventually we've seen it. We know how this turns out. Let's just go now, which is a turning point. I didn't buy.
We are eventually going to start eating each other, zombie or not.
They are portrayed as smarter characters in that movie, though.
I don't think being smart is something, you know, is
well, they have a more of a forward sense thing, because these guys are still, several of them are still predicated on, it's going to get better again, even though it's been so long. And those guys have at least a different sense of what the likelihood is.
Yeah, they're sitting there going, game over, man.
Yeah, but I still think the point remains. It's like, we're in a secure building that's full of food and supplies, and the power's on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's not be in a hurry to go anywhere yet.
Yeah.
The jump to the boat is a little out of left.
And you know, again, in that movie, they're actually...
There's Tom Savini. Right.
They're spending a lot more time... in the mall proper. We see, you know, as opposed to in a room and, you know.
And the reason I think the movie does that, even though it doesn't do it very elegantly, is that sort of the promise of a zombie movie is that at some point you're going to have to run through the zombie apocalypse in a way that everyone's like mob of zombies.
I love that little gag with them.
And at the end of the movie, somehow they do have to, okay, we've got to leave this mall and get somewhere else just because. And it's not explained well in the movie, and that's a failure of it. But I think that's why it's there.
The Snyder version.
And to be fair, there is an insanely fucking cool moment when they're going through the thing, you know, the guy sets off the bomb and the zombies domino.
Oh, it's a great scene. It's just it comes
out of justification.
We'll bring it up when we actually do that movie, but you know, it's just that I wish there was a little bit more compelling reason about why we have to go right now and make this plan. I mean, they do a nice storytelling thing where they have to go sooner than they were really ready, but they were already making that plan to go. So it's something that's like, I wish there was just maybe, and maybe there's a special edition somewhere that has the missing scene that explains.
I think
that
we're going to watch the unrated one, so maybe we've got
That just has like tits in it. It's the only real difference.
Well, but the explanation is in the tit scene.
That's right. The tits explain
everything.
The
tit scene is vital to the plot. He wouldn't have put it in there otherwise, right?
Yeah, of course. Why else would he have put it in there?
I would love to hear that argument from a porn director. Can we lose the scene with the tits? That's vital to the plot.
Yeah. It really is, though. Who's going to come
all
to that movie?
Story doesn't make sense.
All
otherwise.
The scenes have tits. It's a porn movie.
Which brings us back to PG porn, which James Gunn, which...
This is a mistake because... which we know it's a mistake and they're punished for it, but it's like they have they specifically built that wall for if this happened.
Yeah.
They are never going to find you.
Well, they're not going. It's Flyboy who makes the mistake by shooting them.
But they're just
trying to make sure that they're covered. I mean, they're not hiding. They're going to because they do it from the ventilation system.
Right. So
they're just hiding out, just watching to see what happens.
Yeah.
You know. But they.
But
you know,
when they once they leave the ventilation system,
well, again,
that's their mistake.
But
it's not just.
Well, it is a mistake.
But isn't their purpose?
It's Flyboy's mistake.
Right.
He makes that mistake. He does that.
Isn't their purpose just to make sure that the biker gang doesn't open up the.
Well, they're going
to compromise their exit.
Well, exactly.
But once they do, it's like, all right, go back upstairs. They won't find you. Just don't, you know.
Yeah.
And they're talking about that right now. They're like, oh, they won't know we're here and blah, blah, blah.
Well,
so.
Again, Flyboy, you know, underscoring the theme of the movie, you know, Flyboy says no. You know, he goes crazy because they're ransacking the mall.
Yeah, he specifically
and
says.
And he's the one who shoots at them.
He's like,
which makes them start looking for them. He's the one who sets it off, you know. So it's a character flaw, and it's, you know, again, done a little heavy-handedly.
Yeah.
Again, where he spells out his motivation as he's doing it. It's ours. We took it. In a way that no one does. But, you know, just in case we miss the theme. So, like, it's, again, the idea that this movie is trying to be about something. It's not particularly elegant in how it goes about being about something, but the shocking thing is that it was trying to be about something.
Yeah. I mean,
that was the revelation at the time.
You know, what was I trying to say? I don't know.
Something about white slavery.
Yeah. What's happening here?
Something about the superiority of the Caucasian race.
What's happening here is like the same thing. You know, it's like fractal mistakes. It's like the same thing that happened with the zombies. The whole problem with the zombies is the humans were unable to let go and accept that this is happening and that they are losing their world and it's becoming a different world. That's exactly what's happening here. They lose their safety in the mall. Or they lose their mall. They don't lose their safety. They compromise
their
own safety.
Stuff.
They just lose their stuff and they can't accept that. They can't let it just happen and you know, accept the new paradigm kind of what's going on. They try to fight it and that's their downfall. So and you know, here's the mall as prison in several ways. Again, you know, they're lowering all the gates and there's these bars and it feels a lot like you see, you know, you look at prisons and it's the same thing. There's cells lining a balcony with an open area. I mean, the mall feels like a prison in a lot of ways. Yeah, this is another scene that the mall people were probably not too happy.
You're gonna
about
do what now? Now, I remember seeing a making of where at some point they did an explosion and they actually blasted inadvertently one of the big plate glass windows of the mall. It was like, oh, oops.
There goes our whole budget.
Yeah.
There goes our security deposit.
Yeah.
Thank God for the Metro Rail.
We can still come back tomorrow, right?
Oh, no. It was like that when we got here.
Yeah, no. I'm pretty sure that was busted
already.
That was totally the other movie shooting.
Yeah. We told them not to, but then they ran.
That was the movie in the daytime.
We weren't even going to tell you they were here.
Ran.
They ran and ran and ran.
Let's talk about the word zombie. Etymologically, it's a voodoo thing, right?
Yeah.
It comes from Haiti.
And they say zombie in this one.
They do?
I think he just said it, or he's just about to. He was saying, you know, just be cool, let him go. They're going to be dealing with 1,000 zombies. They won't even know we're here, or something to that effect.
Why,
but he does say the word zombie.
Why is it that – because I always thought that people's reticence to use the word zombie in zombie films came from a period after this where – you know,
don't say the Z
don't,
word.
Don't say zombie. Yeah, because everyone freaks out.
Don't say the Z word.
Don't admit what's happening.
Well, I always assumed it was because originally the magic bean is so just blatantly unexplained, or you know, explained in a way that nobody really buys. Nobody really buys the dead actually rising from the grave as something that genuinely could happen.
Christians do.
Yeah, but I mean that's where
as Sam Kinison once did a great routine talks about, says, how come Jesus came back from the dead and no one got scared? Oh my God, the dead walk. Oh, it's Jesus. Hey, Jesus.
Actually, in the book of Matthew, it's not just Jesus. When he comes back, everyone in the graveyard comes back too.
Yeah.
There's 500 fucking zombies walking around Jerusalem.
But somebody does
get
that in the King James Bible.
I think so, yeah.
Holy shit.
It's in every Bible. It's in the book of Matthew.
See, here we have the biker gang grabbing jewels off of a zombie for some reason.
Yeah. Because they can't.
This is a little slapstick.
It's grave robbing, except that they're not in their graves.
And grabbing the cups.
Yeah. Grab the pies.
And then here's the part where it gets
Benny Hill
scene. Gratuitously wacky, but,
If they earn this part of the movie better, I would be on board. But there's just something.
It was like a caravan of clowns who were traveling through the zombie apocalypse.
I don't know.
That would almost make sense. I mean,
if it were just set up better, I would be able to get on board with it. But as it is, I can't.
Would you be more or less happy if one of the zombies was a clown?
Yeah. Zombies actually starting.
But they kept a clown zombie with them.
That I would be on board.
In Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, and Diary of the Dead, all three, there is a clown zombie.
There is
real somewhere in the crowd. Yeah. There's a clown zombie.
Wow.
And there's an idea of
How can you tell?
You can tell because it's full on in the bozo suit with
the wig and the nose.
No. Not how can you tell they're a clown if they have if they're covered in makeup? How can you tell they're dead?
Because they're shuffling.
They had better costume, better costume budget, so they're
what if they were just retarded
distressed.
Clowns? That happens.
It could happen a lot.
Deaf, dumb, and blind.
That happens
clowns.
All the time.
Here's where Flyboy blows it, but anyway, I was going to key off of that is Land of the Dead expands on this idea, and again, this is not done too elegantly, but that in Land of the Dead. The idea that the zombies are actually used for entertainment, that they are part of, the teasing and tormenting zombies is entertaining. So that idea starts here in this movie that it's like, oh, it's fun to tease them. You can do anything you want. And then you kill them and it's awesome. And it's like Christmas every day in Zombie Town. That's what this movie kind of does.
Who has the bugle?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
He probably has a stereo.
There was a Mexican guy just there.
The stock music library has the bugle.
If you could just put a bunch of Hannibal Lecter masks on these guys, you wouldn't have a problem.
Yeah. All we need is 10 billion, 6 billion Hannibal Lecter masks.
You could do it with duct tape, too.
Duct tape or saran wrap?
Duct tape would fall off eventually.
Yeah, but it would be a good temporary solution.
Not if you wrap it like 20 times. That'll stay there until you die. Have you ever tried to get a bunch of duct tape off of something? Especially if it's wrapped around itself?
There goes Tom Savini.
Yep. No, he's got a little
that's right.
To
he
go.
Does
no, he's got this, no, yeah. he's got his machete trick, and this is one of those great easy Ba-ba. Easy tricks. Learn it well, kids. Easiest trick in the world.
It's awesome though.
Just a machete with a shape cut out of it, right?
That's arrow through the head. Steve Martin says hi.
Yeah, that's right.
I love that this little kid. They could squib him, but they didn't have time to put blue makeup on his face.
Get in there, Billy.
Yeah,
we're gonna squib you.
Well, he had to be in bed by 10.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
It was the squib or the makeup. Just one or the other. Some of this is really shocking. Like, they just take that one's head off, and you're like, whoa.
Hey, what the?
Just the way it
that
happens.
That guy has a
just happens, and they move on.
Yeah.
Now, there is a flaw. Unfortunately, I will admit that there is a flaw in their theory, which is let's lock all the store doors so they can't get in. It's like, well, then they will get in, and then the whole store doors will be broken now. It's really, they should have just left it open so that everyone could just take what they want, but they could still seal them all up if they wanted afterwards.
Right. Well, it's like opening your windows in a tornado.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were trying to protect their stuff.
Yeah.
That's wrong. So that's the message.
Fair point.
The wrong priorities. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even closer, it's like leaving your – there's an idea that some people adhere to that if you live in a city
– Oh, he totally left a tire track at the JCPenney's. That must have cost him.
there's a
– He grabbed a mannequin. Why would you grab a mannequin?
Well, and this guy even points it out. He grabs a TV and he's like, yeah, what are you going to watch on that? And he's like, you're right. Fuck TVs.
Yeah.
Starts destroying them.
There's a.
In fact, what are we doing with our lives right now?
A precept of.
Hey, cigarette machine. That's what I'd be breaking into. Cigarette machine.
A precept of automotive security, if you live in a big city, is just don't have anything in your car. And when you park, leave the windows
down.
Yeah,
leave it. Yeah.
So if they're going to if they're going to try to grab shit out of your car, they don't have to break the window.
Yeah. Come on and get it.
Or just don't leave anything valuable in your car.
Well, they don't know that until
they get in.
But
you have to make it obvious that there's nothing in there worth stealing. So a lot of people, people leave their cars unlocked or leave the windows down. So, yeah, there's nothing in here. There's no need to break my window because nothing's in here.
And it's easy to get into. No need to break. Just try the handle.
Are we learning yet?
Yeah.
That's why I have black wheels in my car, but I don't have black wheels. I just spray painted my hubcaps black so that no one is compelled to take them.
Wow.
I'm fine with being ghetto.
That's an interesting theory. Okay.
Well, I also have a pink teddy bear hanging from my rearview mirror so that it sort of implies that a girl owns the car, so there's not going to be electronics in it.
Oh.
Don't knock it. It works.
Oh, wow.
Don't knock it. It works.
I just want to point out that you don't know that's what works. Yeah. It's like whistling to keep tigers away. Yeah.
Hey, it's working so far.
I don't have
there haven't been any tigers. That's,
yeah. Okay.
I don't have a perfect control, but every other car at my high school did get broken into, and mine didn't when I had the pink teddy bear.
Did other girls' cars get broken into? Because that also invalidates your theory.
No, none of the girls at my school had cars.
Well, oh. Then, okay.
Well, maybe
there was only like six parking spots. There was only like six guys that were allowed to have cars that had a
maybe they didn't want to break into the gay guy's car.
Yeah.
Because, you know, might have diseases.
At the end of the day, they didn't break into mine.
Yeah. One way or the other, the pink teddy bear saved his car.
So now it's there. Although now I have it sitting next to a Star Wars smell goodie thingy, so maybe I'm invalidating
myself. Gal I used to work with used to have a big oil painting of Jesus on the back deck of her car. Because she literally said, you know, it's a classic, like the, you know, like your grandma would have in her house if she was of that way, you know, like the classic, you know, oil painting, like practically a paint by numbers, you know, Jesus, you know exactly the picture I'm talking about, and it was like literally sitting on the back deck of her car, and as she said, she made no apology for it. She, you know, she worked a lot in the Hispanic parts of town, and you know, like,
don't bring in the
Catholics, man, you know,
yeah,
big old Jesus there, staring at you, watching you,
yeah.
It's not chat room's calling me sexist. It's not sexist of me. It's sexist of the world, and I'm just playing along.
Yeah. I'm just playing by the rules, man.
That's right.
Yeah, I want to swing off a second story like that sometime.
I totally do. I absolutely do. And then, you know, Savini just can't resist. Like, because Savini also does stunts.
Yeah.
You know,
he loves
doing stunts. Of course, Savini you might recognize from, he kind of reprises this role in a way in the Rodriguez film.
Planet Terror?
No.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Thank you.
Dusk Till Dawn. Wow.
He sort of does a grown-up version of this guy.
Yeah. And then turns into a vampire himself,
and
too.
And then there's Steve Perry, the lead singer of
That's right. And I could have been gone. Long foolish heart.
Dude, I said no more Steve Perry psychos.
What's that?
Steve Perry. No, it's a basketball reference.
Oh, okay. All right, Steve Perry. Now, here's where we have the obligatory guts-eating scenes.
Uh-huh.
And which are always my least favorite parts of the zombie movies. It's kind of like you kind of have to.
You
do
have
it.
To. No,
you
have
why
to.
Is
have
it,
it.
Why is it your least favorite part?
It's just because it's kind of like, okay, now we have to have the guts eating scene.
Well, they do it because it's so damn successful with the pig guts. Yeah. It
exactly.
looks real. It
exactly.
Looks like, it looks like an expensive.
Because they often do it with real guts. That if you do it with real guts, then it works.
Now we're coming up on a shot that they must have been the last shot of the day because it's so fucked up. But they didn't get like the focus is all messed up and bad. But
it's like
he's very clearly out of focus.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's very much.
They had
out of
no
focus.
Time.
Yeah. Oh, it was also raining. There.
I think,
did you see that?
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yeah, it might be the rain. It might be the fact that they might have not had a camera operator because you know they just had to put a glass in front of the camera and go run, do it quick. Sun's coming up.
And this guy,
I have to imagine he's on drugs or something because there's no other reason he would fucking. Go back to that.
It's a good punchline that needs a better setup.
Yeah,
you know the punchline is why it's there, but it's not really set up very well.
He's just like, I like these things.
Yeah, I've been wanting to.
All my friends are gone now, so I do these.
6 months. I really want to know what my blood pressure is. It's really important to know.
What if it was legitimate? Like he legitimately has a heart condition. Blood pressure monitors are hard to come by after the apocalypse.
I've been looking and looking and looking.
He needs to know whether he needs to find some nitroglycerin pills.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Here we go.
Not a good blood mixture here.
Oh, but it's been bright red paint. Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. I was just saying, little foam rubbery on that
one.
The
unpainted foam is,
Savini did eventually learn the
here
technique.
Here we go. Here we go.
Did learn that he has no muscles, stomach muscles. He has a six-pack, but no muscles under there.
Yeah.
How does that work?
He just packs his guts the right way.
See, that's actually his intestines are muscles.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting.
That's how Chuck Norris is.
He can flex his intestines, yeah.
Now, Day of the Dead, and Mike can testify to this, Day of the Dead takes this idea to the nth degree.
Oh, my God. They do it like five times in Day of the Dead.
But in Day of the Dead, there's a point where a guy gets his lower half of his body torn off, and he's still alive.
Yeah.
And he gets to like still watch that happen as his legs are being dragged away.
And he tells the zombies, choke on him.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
he's a badass.
It's this scene just taken to the widest possible
degree. Well, there's that one, and there's the other one where it's one of his cronies who's being torn apart and screaming.
Oh, and the head.
You see
his
guts, and they pull his head off.
Yeah, the head is screaming, and and they actually do a nice thing with the soundtrack where the head, the vocal cords stretch.
Yeah.
So it goes, ah!
Yeah,
and like the voice gets higher, and then it snaps, and it's a nice bit. So this is, watching this in the theater, I'm like, hey, wait a minute,
he's kind of fucked.
I don't think he's gonna make it.
Yeah,
this hero,
it's like in the Blob. Who's gonna be our new hero?
He's a main character, and he's kind of
Captain Kangaroo. No,
he's already a goner.
Flock of Seagulls. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Captain Kangaroo, David Spade. You know, I'm going to someday I want to see a zombie movie where all of them are celebrity lookalikes.
They do that
a little bit in the remake.
Dead.
Yeah.
Really is
touch on that.
Is inspired scene.
Yeah.
on Snyder and Gunn's part.
Here we go. Run.
That's right. Push him out. One guy left.
It's like, you can do this.
You've already, you can do it. You'll be all right. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine. You're going to be okay.
Have you ever had the elevator door close on you? It doesn't happen so much anymore because they have the little safety thing.
No, they still do it, though.
Yeah.
It's just once they do it, they're like, oh, sorry about that, and they bounce back.
But some of them do it really hard before
Clang.
Like, what the fuck, man?
That's the thing about car windows, too. Like, you think a car window would have a safety mechanism.
No,
so
it does not.
Absolutely not. My dog almost killed itself because it was standing on the little thingy on the side of the door, and she just put her foot on the window up thingy with her head out the window. And she was just, like, making this ungodly sound. And then her feet slipped off, so she was hanging by her neck.
Oh, God.
It was terrible. Elevators and windows, they both suck.
You said almost killed herself, right?
Almost. Okay. She did not. Yeah, although that same dog was shot at by our neighbors. Welcome to Arkansas.
Wow.
Oh, you told that story.
Yeah.
I forget what movie.
They x-rayed my dog for some other reason. And it's like, why are there bullets in my dog? Fucking Arkansas.
I didn't just shoot at. Shot.
Yeah. No, shot. Yeah, yeah.
Successfully
so
shot.
This night they messed up the mall pretty good. It's finally that guy. I finally got what I wanted at the mall. I got a leg.
Yeah.
I got a human leg.
I got a rock.
Aww.
And I like this bit. She's willing.
She's
to
the
give
one
up.
Ready to go.
She's like let's just.
He's dead. Let's book.
But I appreciate what's going on there as well, because she's calling to him and she says, for God's sake, because he doesn't say anything to her.
Yeah.
And she's like, please acknowledge that there is another human being in this mall still.
Talk to me. I'm pregnant here. I'm pregnant over here, for Christ's sake. I'm a hormonal factory. I'm going nuts.
You know, it turns out it's yours.
Yeah.
Does that help?
We hadn't
let's
even
go.
We hadn't even met. I don't know how that works. Yeah. I can't back that up, but that's how it is.
And here we go. Here's the here comes the
here's the reveal.
This reveal. Dun, dun, dun.
Howdy. See, they went beyond the blue on him. They actually painted the veins in and so on.
Yeah.
So. They actually sprung for the gray paint that
day. And this is what happens when you get an actor and not just some guys to shamble around. I really feel like he's going to break his ankle. It scares me. This shot in particular always freaks me out.
The way he trips.
Yeah.
And the way he almost steps on that guy's face. That's a lot of trust that guy didn't flinch.
Yeah. But here they are, shopping.
Oh. Finally.
They're just going to shop forever.
I've been wearing this jersey for 6 months.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to some new season.
Did you see the
fashions.
Neck on those head models?
I know. Oh, my God.
They were weird? Like the fucking things.
The tribal.
Tonway from... I was going to go for a prequel reference.
Oh, the Tonway. Kaminoans.
Kaminoans.
Yeah. Oh. Here we go. Unfortunately, he's only freshly dead.
Yeah.
And he's
nice.
So he kind of remembers. That's a good neck wound.
Yeah, that's a nice one. It's got actual depth to it. He's like, huh. Oh, that's right. I got a chick back home. She'll be worried about me.
All right. I better let her know.
I better let her know I'm going to be late.
There's a guy who stole the gun from earlier.
Yeah.
Still looking down the barrel like, oh, hi.
Yeah.
That's quite something, isn't it?
And the nurse. And the escalator guy. It's all your favorite zombies.
Yeah.
Sexy zombie nurse.
Dude, where are you going? What's up, dude?
No, check it out. This is awesome. Check this out.
Honey, I brought some people home for dinner.
Yeah. You don't have to cook or anything.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Good news, you don't have to cook. Uh-oh. Yes, they didn't fortify it in case one of them became a zombie and led a horde of zombies back to the hallway.
But seriously, you have to consider
really
every
to think about that.
Outcome.
And she did, she thought about it to the extent that she made him teach her how to use the helicopter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'd have no ending if she hadn't learned to do that.
Yeah.
And, which was, nice plotting that also was what led the bikers to realize that there was somebody in there.
Yeah. It was their salvation and their damnation.
Wow.
Irony.
That's awesome.
Is that art? Does that qualify as irony?
No. Sure. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it actually does. Yeah.
Actually, hey, we found one. A real one. Nice.
Ding.
Wow. That's like a black fly in your
shirt. Put that one on
Brian's
the shelf.
Like, reach down, God. Give me a high five.
Yeah. High five me, God.
Bam.
I found irony. And then when God reached down to high five me, crush me. Ironic, yeah. Huh? Wait, no.
Oh, we were doing so well.
I prayed to God to save my life, and he did, and then
killed
we high-fived, and he killed me.
Yeah.
That's irony. That's irony for you.
Maybe.
Yeah. Oh,
and I love that it's just like, oh, it's
there
done.
There you go. See, he had no trouble. Like, he's crossed the line. He's crossed that line now.
Yeah.
Like, it took him a second to shoot his buddy in the head, but you I've been playing poker with for 6 months, dead, gone.
Yeah, because you keep taking my money.
Yeah.
You keep fucking winning.
Yeah. Because you made me serve you.
Yeah.
There's three of us left, and I still had to be the waiter.
Yeah.
Now, this as we know.
Now, he was telling her he wasn't going to go.
As we know from our research, that, you know, that, and that was going to be the ending.
Yeah.
That was the original intended ending of this movie, is that no one lived in this movie.
Which is very much like Night of the Living Dead as well.
Yeah, strangely enough. And very much like what Snyder did with his reboot as well. But now see, again, low budget. These zombies have been walking around for months now. They're just way too clean and put together. When you have a real budget, then you can do what Snyder did where you can show like, wow, they're really getting pretty messed up out there. But this idea of this was the setup for what was going to be the ending, that Peter would kill himself and so would Fran.
Yeah, in fact, that's why the exploding head
exists.
That's
why they had a head mold, yeah.
They from the beginning, they just used her exploding head because she was going to... When she gets out and looks at them, she was going to pull herself up and shove her head into the helicopter blades, which I guess they were setting up in the beginning as well with helicopter zombies.
At least they got a head cast of it, so they were ready to go.
So that's why this movie feels like The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Oh.
It does suddenly...
Oh, yep.
It also suddenly... Like, it's not... I guess it is a little bit clear that Peter's like, yeah, fuck it, and changes his mind. But it feels, it's like, how come? Why did he just suddenly decide it's worth living for?
as a friend, one of my friends that I went to see this movie with at the time in 78, and it was a black guy, makes it okay, where he says the reason he changes his mind is because the first zombie at the door is a black guy. And he goes, I'm not going to let another nigger eat me. And again, it was a black guy.
He said it.
He said it, not me.
It's okay.
He said it.
So, racist commissioner?
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah.
You'll allow it?
All right. I'll allow it. Yeah.
I'm quoting. I'm reporting the news.
I don't
make it. I'm reporting the news. I'm not making it.
Fair and balanced.
The fact that these things are going to get through his own, that skull with that Derringer.
Yeah.
That too. It's like you've got every gun in the world in the room.
And he's got this little one.
And I'm going to use a Derringer. That way you get to be like semi-conscious and bleeding while they eat you.
Yeah. And then the AT music.
Yes,
right
out of the stock library.
Zombies, you
lie
zombies.
Down. I'll be with you later. You, I'll punch you in the head. And you, I'll just look at you funny and you'll flinch.
Back off. Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah, that's right. See, even as a zombie, she's scared of a giant black man.
They remember, Trey.
Yeah, they totally remember. They're learning. Awful. They're actually learning. So he gets to do this, literally
just
it is this like football hero music that they have playing. That's hysterical.
He breaks that one's arm.
That's just mean.
He's just running in a circle now.
Yeah, now he's now
doing double
dude,
kicks.
Okay, let's step this up.
Woo!
Let's move this along.
I like this. This is a funny moment.
Like, oh,
he's like, well,
better.
Okay.
That's a new one. I like that one. That's new.
This one has a scope.
Yeah.
They'll press the red button.
Yeah.
There we go.
Now that's a scary scene to do. That's a dangerous scene to do right there. Like, you stagger toward the helicopter that's hovering while a guy jumps on
board. I wonder how
board.
Difficult it would be if the helicopter is just hovering 4 feet up to throw it off balance just by your own power. If you could tug on it hard enough to make it go...
Probably.
You could.
Probably you could.
Trouble,
it probably wouldn't be easy, but you could
if
probably
it
do
were...
it.
Would the helicopter be balancing on a point only as big as the center of where the rotors are spinning, or would it be balancing on a point the width of the rotors?
I think it's got the width of the rotors because it's looking all that
way. A decent center of balance.
I mean, it's that close to the surface, it has a ground effect to deal with as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's got the force of...
Why are we talking about physics? Let's talk about fucking zombies.
And here you go.
They're pushing down,
the end, dot, dot, dot.
Again, talking about, you know, a little bit about race, it was probably a big deal that, you know, white woman and black,
white
man,
woman, black man
went off to repopulate, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that we never, you know, in any Romero-sanctioned story, we never hear anymore, you know? We never find out whatever happened.
That's very much the author behind The Walking Dead in his letter at the end of the first volume. It's like, that's his thing. It was like, you know, I love zombie movies, but they always just end. You know, like Dawn of the Dead just ends. And I wanted to do a story where... it doesn't ever end.
Right.
It just, we're going to follow these people. Some of them are going to die. We'll find some others, and we'll just keep going.
Right. And this is, I mean, but this is the answer. What happens? The zombies win. They spend the rest of eternity or until they decay, which I think they mentioned they could last as long as like 10 years, they said in the – I think the TV was talking about that, but maybe that was in the extended version. But so they just spend the rest of the time wandering around the shopping mall.
They seem
happy. It seems like what they want to do.
Totally happy. So. Now, not too many years after this movie came out, Tom Savini came out with a book called Grand Illusions, I believe it was called, which is a big coffee table sized book about how he did his effects for movies like Friday the 13th and this movie and a bunch of other movies. And was great because it was all very low budgety stuff. It was all how you do it without squibs and how you can do these things with compressed air and how you do the thing with the machete trick. And he literally went film by film and talked about in this book with lots of pictures and illustrations and making up stuff. And it was really, just a huge resource for me as a low budget filmmaker. Like, oh wow, this is great stuff to know. And the fishing line and compressed air tricks were especially useful, which I still use them to this day. I'm still using those old nonsense tricks even in the digital era.
Dawn of the Dead, 1978 theatrical cut.
Yes.
That did just happen. Yes.
It did.
I'm actually warming up to it. And I don't know exactly why.
Yeah, I like it better kind of each time I see it. I agree, actually.
But my initial problems with it were that I didn't it felt awful long, and I think that's a plotting thing. I didn't feel a sense of each individual character's plight being played out in a way and then interweaving and the changes in the drama on the human level. At least not nearly as much as in 2004.
It's not a super sophisticated.
Yeah. It doesn't have quite as many subplots as you want.
And the problem is I can't blame it for that. It's a nature versus nurture thing, man. This movie was made up in the, it was founding all these other things. It was founding zombies and it was made for like no money. And ultimately, what can you say? George Romero, I've heard Trey say, George Romero isn't exactly the world's greatest writer-director. He's just the guy that came up with the zombie thing and made a fucking oeuvre out of it. I mean, he turned around this entire thing in one movie, and then the second movie completely hammered it home. And for that, cool. Thank you for zombies, I guess. But this movie isn't one that I don't think... As I came to this movie, I'm basically a control subject. I came to this movie having seen very little zombie stuff and with no interest. And as a movie, it didn't hold my attention very well. Brian?
I think you're pretty much right. It's as a film on its own, it's kind of unfocused. It's a little rambly in a sense. But you can't really criticize it for that because the man invented a genre. The man invented an entire new storytelling concept or device and a whole set of new tropes. And not very many people get to do that or get to be that successful at it. So. The real value in this film may not necessarily be in this film itself, although it's a solid enough film. But the real value is in what stories other people were able to tell by building off of what this film and what Night of the Living Dead established.
Yeah. You need to have a Star Wars before you can have some prequels. I got an actual reaction out of all these guys.
You're fired. Get out.
You need to establish tropes before you can subvert the tropes.
Right. if you're gonna play with the conventions, you have to make the conventions at some point.
Gorkman?
Dawn of the Dead is the thing about it. This version is that it's really more a series of vignettes than a story, so to speak. You know, it's about the same characters and kind of how things develop with them, but it's not. You know, it's you can definitely almost sense when one episode has ended and the next one is beginning, so it doesn't feel like there's a consistent through line. And for that, it can start to feel a little long because you're like, all right, get somewhere already.
Get to the point.
Yeah. I'm in agreement with you guys. It's growing on me the more I watch it. For all the things that Romero, achieved with it and all the things that he was trying to achieve with it. I think there's a lot to be appreciated in this movie, and I can definitely see why it's not only a classic, but the classic of the zombie genre.
I think I have a theory for why it's growing on us. Because the first time you watch it, you have expectations of it that it does not live up to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have those expectations the next time. You watch the movie and you expect that it's going to do this whole big...
it's going to be the greatest zombie movie of all time.
It's
the first zombie movie of all time.
And it's hardly even, what we would consider a zombie movie in the sense, the Snyder version treats it much more like a natural disaster and they're dealing with it constantly.
It's more of a Noah's Ark type movie.
Yeah, this one is more of a, all right, the zombies are my excuse to put them in this position, but now I'm watching, you know, now I'm watching the pressure cooker of what's going on with them.
Of these people
stuck in this small room. Yeah.
I will also say that in terms of historic movies that, you know, you may look at from 30 years into the future or whatever, and you look back and go, oh, that wasn't that great. This movie is much better than some other movies that fit into that example.
Sure,
the one that jumps into my brain being Easy Rider, which you watch now and you go,
wow,
this, what the hell is this?
Well, I think Dorkman feels that way about Blade Runner.
No, you feel that way about Blade Runner.
I feel that way a little bit about Blade Runner, yeah.
Right on.
But besides, as a movie, you know, visual effects and art direction are amazing, but, you know.
Trey, Dawn of the
Dead? I can't watch that.
Yeah, it's like the only movie I think we've discovered, isn't this the second oldest movie we've ever done on Down in Front? Jaws being the only one I can
think of. Well, Jaws.
Strangelove,
yeah,
I guess.
And Strangelove in 2001, yeah.
Yeah, Strangelove in 2001. So, you know, and those movies.
Star Wars is older than us, too.
Just barely, yeah. The reason those movies are still amazing and remembered is because they are so rare. Those movies like that still hold up 20, 30, 40 years later are very, 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 very rare. You know, I wonder what, you know, movies from, you know, Iron Man 40 years from now, you know, like, you know, your kids are going, Dad, you really thought this was cool? Really? Why? So, you know, again,
shut up.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Look at the rendering.
Yeah, I know, it's so terrible.
You actually made these effects with computers?
This is only in 4K. So before they had the implant. So anyway, the fact that
I can only see one side of it.
Yeah,
that doesn't even...
the fact that you guys watched this movie all fairly recently. None of you had seen this until getting ready for this, right? Is that the case? You know, and you kind of like the fact that you knew, like, well, okay, yeah, this is a zombie movie because they're following all the zombie rules, you know, shows the influence of this movie, because this is the movie that set those rules. This is the movie that said this is how they work. And now it's like a rule where, you know, so like people think that Asimov's laws are actually somehow built into real computers.
Yeah, I find that adorable.
You know, that, you know, it's like, no, Asimov, you know, you may not know who Asimov, you may not know what the word Asimov means. You may not know what the three laws are, but still people seem to know the three laws.
Not only do I find that funny that people know the three laws, but they're always like, you know, they're like, oh yeah, we got to make sure, you know, people talk about robots. It's like, well, we got to make sure they got the three laws. I'm like, the point of the story was that the laws don't work. That's the point of iRobot. Yeah.
And you know, I really wish that instead of those catching on, his pronunciation of robot caught on.
Robot?
A robot.
Robot.
A robot must never cause harm.
It does with
Zoidberg.
Zoidberg says it.
Yeah, robot.
Anyway, wrap it up.
Back to this movie. The fact that, again, this movie is somehow it has this weird transcendence where it transcends what it actually is, which is a very cheap, you know, kind of clanky B movie. Somehow it started this slow but steady progression that brought us to today, when a major studio will release a huge, crazy, over the top steroid version of this same story and, you know, call it one of their big movies. You know, in 1978, when Ordinary People was what studios were making. You know, no studio would ever have made this movie. So
No human studio.
A zombie studio would totally have made it. So it really is an artifact from a different time where, you know, it's like to see a movie anywhere remotely like this, George Romero in Pittsburgh or someone like him had to make it because you weren't going to see a movie like this any other way. Now you can get 10 of them every day. Now you get, you know, the Saw franchise. It's going to go on forever.
And they're
actually, they said this is the last one.
Yeah, right.
They promised.
You know, again, this at the time, and of course, at the time, a lot of people were like, oh my God, this is horrifying. Like, you know, what is this doing to our children? It's like, well, it means they're going to grow up and be you guys. We're going to go, yeah, then the guy's head exploded. That wasn't so great. You know, it's like because you're desensitized to it now. But we were pretty shocked in 78.
And the reason this movie isn't as strong as it necessarily could be is because the better filmmakers of the day were making movies like Ordinary People.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas the best filmmakers today that are working today are making these kind of movies.
So, you know, it's like
Danny Boyle wouldn't have made this movie if he were working in 78. He would have made something like Ordinary People.
Yeah, but now he might make a movie like this, and that's great.
This has been Down in Front. You can always find more episodes at downinfront.net. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, get a brand new episode every single week. You can find us on Twitter /downinfront, Facebook /downinfrontshow. You can email us at contact@downinfront.net. And this episode will not have show notes or chapter breaks because we screwed over Matt Feta Veda and released it the day we recorded it. So sorry, Matt. But every other episode, you can find chapter breaks and enhancements in the iTunes file. You can go to the forum, involve yourself in the community, and actually find information for when we're recording these so you can join us live in the chat room like these fine people have today. You go to the store and buy a thing, and if you buy this DVD from us at our store on our website, we get $1. Plus, this DVD is like $5, which is not a bad deal. And until next time, my name is T. Christie.
Brian.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
It sounded like it was like a dyslexic brain.
Brian's. Yeah. Brian's.
Dyslexic, after, dyslexic zombies want Brian's.
Oh, I'm screwed.
What have we done to ourselves?
I'm taking the helicopter. Who's with me?
Yeah.
And this has been Down in Front. Thank you very much for listening. Good night, good night.
I'm not going to be a dead mother to you guys. Don't leave me without a gun.
Until you get pregnant.
Well...